And remember, we change tomorrow by changing today, and we have to because tomorrow really matters. Tell a friend. Stay tuned for the Peter B. Collins Show coming up next after the CBS News.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. From bad to worse. CBS's Anthony Mason looking at the latest unemployment numbers.
It looks like the job loss trend is just getting worse, and that it's probably not going to turn for a while. According to a Standard & Poor's forecast, the unemployment rate, which is 5.1% now, will probably be 6% by the end of the year. We're on a downward trend on job losses, and it's going to get worse.
Fire and some explosions reportedly on a B-1 bomber after it landed today at an airbase in Qatar. CBS's David Martin says U.S. military sources say it was not a crash, however.
Sources indicate that some munitions did go off. The explanation for that may simply be that the Qataris do not want the U.S. Air Force to admit that the planes that it flies out of that airbase are carrying bombs, because those bombs are used over Iraq and Afghanistan.
The base where it happened, headquarters for all U.S. air operations in the Middle East. Talk about a hard rain falling. Billy Bishop in Cullman, Alabama.
Tried to take my feet out from under me. Not blow me down, but take my feet out from under me. And there was hail in it. I mean, it was like, you know, penny to nickel size hail.
Reports of tornadoes touching down there, too. Forecasters warn of possible tornadoes in 21 central counties in Alabama. This over the next several hours. School systems throughout the Birmingham area dismissing students ahead of a wave of storms. 40 years after he was dropped by an assassin's bullet. The legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. honored today by presidential candidates outside the Memphis hotel where he was killed. John McCain apologizing for voting against a Kane national holiday.
I'd remind you that we can all be a little late sometimes in doing the right thing. And Dr. King understood this about his fellow Americans.
Her motorcade pulling up just as McCain's left, Hillary Clinton.
Because of Dr. King, these young people, my daughter's generation, grew up taking for granted that children of all colors could attend school together.
And Barack Obama in Indiana.
Through his faith, his courage, and his wisdom, Dr. Martin Luther King moved an entire nation. He preached the gospel of brotherhood, of equality, and justice.
Thousands gathered outside the Lorraine Motel where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was killed 40 years ago. And the debate raged over whether Dr. King's dream is still alive. Bevelyn Henderson is a school counselor.
I think it's still alive. It needs working on, and we have to do a lot more as black people, but I think the dream is still alive.
Many older African Americans complain black youth are refusing to live out Dr. King's dream and message of nonviolence. Jim Frisula, CBS News, Memphis.
Person familiar with Microsoft's bid for Yahoo says the software company is now reevaluating its offer in light of the economic climate and the Internet pioneer's deteriorating business. Wall Street wrapping up another week of downs and ups. NASDAQ best week in a year and a half, finishing up 7 points today. This is CBS News.
At Mercedes-Benz, we've recently engineered a great new way for you to own a Mercedes-Benz. It's called the Mercedes-Benz Certified Pre-Owned Event. Every certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz features an extensive 155-point inspection and lifetime roadside assistance, so you know it's all Mercedes-Benz through and through. Get limited-time financing now through April 30th. And remember, if it's not at your authorized Mercedes dealer, it's not a certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz.
See dealer for complete details on warranty coverage and roadside assistance. Abbreviated inspection applicable to vehicles less than 15 months old with less than 18,000 miles.
Tell me what you want. Dell has people talking, like the customer who wrote, "There is no other choice when it comes to quality, performance, and value." Value like saving $220 now on a select Dell Vostra laptop featuring Intel Core 2 Duo processor. Put Dell to work for your small business at Dell.com/radio. Prices do not include taxes and other fees. Limited time offer. U.S. only, subject to change.
In Iraq, the government proposing a freeze on raids against suspected Shiite militia. CBS's Laura Logan calls it a failure of the prime minister's offensive.
It's quite obvious that Iraq's security forces are not in a position to keep the peace here. And they are not in a position to take on the militias. They're not in a position to defend the Iraqi government, even. That remains the job of U.S. forces in this country.
New York Times says during last week's assault on militias in Basra, 1,000 Iraqi soldiers and policemen either refused to fight or fled their posts. Today, a State Department official confirms that Blackwater USA's contract for protective services in Iraq is being renewed for one more year. Naomi Campbell is free on bail. This after being arrested at London's Heathrow Airport last night, suspicion of assaulting a police officer. The model released pending further inquiries. Witnesses say Campbell was aboard a British Airways plane when she became involved in a dispute over her luggage. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
I used to be so scared of color.
Yeah.
Because I painted my college dorm room kind of a brown. It wasn't good.
Wow.
But I'm glad I'm back. I like color.
It is nice.
It's time to make life a shade more interesting. Now through April 9th, get $5 off 1 gallon cans and $20 off 5 gallon buckets of Behr paint at the Home Depot. So pop the top on a more colorful life.
A whole new house.
The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. U.S. only. See store for details.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents a word from your valve stem cover.
Thank you. No cameras.
No, wait, hold on. You're a what?
A valve stem cover.
A valve stem
cover? Yeah, I cover the valve stems on your tires. I know your tires inside and out. Mostly out.
Well, thanks, but I'll ask my Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealer about tire inflation, rotation, special offer.
Fine, then I'll just keep doing what I do best.
And that is?
Covering valve stems.
Right.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service. Come in, keep going.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm glad you're listening. Coming up later this hour, the former star of MASH, Mike Farrell, is going to join us. He's written a book, a personal memoir, but that's not why we're talking with him. He is an outspoken activist against the death penalty. He leads an organization called Death Penalty Focus. And there's a lot of good news for those of us who oppose capital punishment. The state of New Jersey is on the verge of banning executions. That's right, Tony Soprano's state is going to ban executions. But before we get to Mike Farrell, Eric Bollert returns to our program. He's at Media Matters for America, helps us keep the corporate media on the straight and narrow to the extent that that's even conceivable. And he lives in the Garden State of New Jersey. Do you have an opinion about this change in the death penalty law in your state, Eric?
It's interesting, isn't it? It looks like it's going to happen. It's narrow, but basically the premise is that the whole process doesn't work. No one is ever executed, for better or for not.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's the point of going through this endless legal charade when no one is ever executed? And obviously there are people who are opposed to it, who are opposed to it for philosophical reasons. So there doesn't really seem to be any reason to have this on the books when it just produces really endless appeals and no one is ever satisfied. I mean, if you're a victim or a victim's family, and then they put you through this year, 5, 10, 15 year, where you think you're going to get some sort of closure with an execution that never happens.
Right.
Everyone should just be on the same page, I think. And it's interesting. It's going to happen. I mean, New Jersey, I mean, it used to be pretty, 15, 20 years ago, it was a dependable Republican state. It is one of the bluest states in the country now.
Yeah, it's really an amazing shift. Well, I want to talk about your current column that people can access from the homepage at MediaMatters.org, because you've combined things that are just like catnip to me, all right? First of all, you're identifying something that is not being covered by somebody who should cover it.
Yeah.
And that's challenging in itself, but I often, when I talk with you and Paul and JMO, I like to turn in media situations where I feel that they're not covering a story and try to figure out why. So the guy who's not covering the story is Howard Kurtz, who is the media guru at the Washington Post. And the story involves a public conflict between Joe Klein, who is a well-known columnist at Time magazine and also wrote that book Primary Colors about the Clintons back in the 1990s, And Glenn Greenwald, who's been a not too frequent guest, but he's been on this program four or five times. I have a high regard for him. He's a blogger, and he writes at Salon.com. He's trained as a lawyer. He's written a powerful book about the U.S. Constitution. And he took Joe Klein on. With that set up, let me ask you to take the narrative from there. What are the issues here about what Klein wrote and what Glenn Greenwald called him on, and why is Howard Kurtz not interested?
Yeah, it is it's an interesting cocktail, interesting mixture. In terms of what Klein wrote and what Greenwald called him on, I mean, it really...
And we join you now live on the Peter B. Collins Show. Thank you, Denver, and we'll talk to you later. We had a few technical problems here at the beginning of the show. And I want to thank our folks at Jones Satellite Master Control in Denver for helping us work through it here. And we're now live on the Peter B. Collins Show. Coming up a little bit later this hour, Congressman Joe Sestak, a Democrat from Pennsylvania, whose distinction going in as a freshman is that he is the guy who defeated Kurt Weldon, a longtime Republican Congress member from Pennsylvania. He'll be with us later this hour. Next hour, we're going to take a lighter look at the mess in Iraq. Christopher Cerf and Victor Navasky have formed the Institute of Expertology, and they have a new book which pokes fun at mission accomplished and all the issues that led us into Iraq. And they'll be with us for some lighthearted but ironic delivery next hour. Also on the program, Joshua Grossman. They follow the votes of our elected officials at progressivepunch.org, and he's going to be with us to show you how you can use the site to evaluate your members' votes. And Brad Friedman will be with us later on in the program to talk election protection. It's all ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show, and let's see if I can make this work. Forty years ago today, Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated in Memphis on the balcony of that motel. And I don't believe that James Earl Ray was the lone gunman. He may have been the only shooter in the area, but he certainly did not act alone. Robert Perry joins us now. He publishes at consortiumnews.com. His most recent book is called Neck Deep, all about the mess that George W. Bush has created for us. Bob, thanks for standing by during our technical problems here. Good to talk to you, as usual.
Thank you, Peter.
And 40 years ago today, it's hard to think that Dr. King has been gone that long and that 1968 was such a bloody year. His assassination sparked riots all over the country. It was followed in short order by the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy and then culminated in the election of Richard Nixon that November. And you have an interesting reminiscence from Jeff Cohen, our mutual friend, who's been a media activist for a long time, that's up at Consortium News, about how Dr. King was moving into a much more confrontational mode and not just on desegregation and other civil rights issues.
That's right. People think of King in retrospect in this sort of iconic way. We've almost made him, obviously an important figure, which he was. But we've also stripped him of some of the very tough analysis and criticism that he applied to aspects of the U.S. government. And in the last year or so of his life, he became a very stern critic of the Vietnam War and the militarism that he saw coming to dominate the United States. In much the way that President Eisenhower warned about the danger of the military-industrial complex in his farewell address in 1961, King was touching on many of those same points about what kind of country the United States was becoming, and he even called the United States, his own country, the greatest purveyor of violence in the world at that time. So he was becoming a very stern critic, and that was a position that was not well received by the mainstream news media at that point. Places like Newsweek and The Washington Post essentially ridiculed King and said he was getting in over his head. He was talking about things he didn't really know about. He should stick to civil rights. So that's always been a part of his legacy that has not gotten the attention that other parts have. Mm-hmm. And the piece by Jeff Cohen goes back to that. And Jeff has been trying for years to get the mainstream media to to deal with it and not just sort of slough it off and pretend that it wasn't something that was very central to King's message when it was.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. King was also under pressure from more radical and sometimes extreme elements of the African-American community, the Black Panthers, the Black Peacestone Nation. There were many groups. Malcolm X was becoming a force to be reckoned with. And so he was battling on many different fronts and trying to maintain his focus while clearly as a man of religion, he was deeply troubled by the morality or immorality of our adventures in Vietnam.
Right. He was sort of the conventional wisdom of that period, if you think back on it. I mean, we certainly lived through it, Peter, but some people may not be as old as we are. The attitude in the mainstream press that I was reading at the time was that King had passed him by, that he was both an anachronism to the black community and he was acting in kind of these odd ways and criticizing the Vietnam War. And he was being seen as almost, not exactly a kook, but someone who was no longer at the top of his game and no longer that influential. And that, in a sense, fed into the moment, the period right before his death, when there was, of course, a violent demonstration in Memphis when he was leading a march, and some people at the end of it got into fights with the police and did some looting, and that was sort of there was the sign of both the pressure from the government, more and more angry at him because he was attacking the Vietnam War and attacking so much of the basis of what had become the U.S. government in Washington, and he wasn't being seen as radical enough by some of the people in the black community, so he was sort of caught between, and that was sort of the situation, why he was so depressed in many ways in the days and weeks before he was killed.
Well, and lay over that, the COINTELPRO operation that we now know much more about, but J. Edgar Hoover was shadowing every move of Dr. King, knew who he was sleeping with, tapped his phones, and, you know, probably had infiltrated the inner circle of his leadership group. And so he was dealing with demons coming at him from almost every angle.
Right. And that's why I think many people do not really accept the notion that James Earl Ray acted alone. It's hard to believe some of Ray's later stories about Raoul and how he was completely a pawn. The evidence does point pretty much to his involvement.
Mm-hmm.
But there is also this question of what was he up to? Why would this this guy was an escaped convict who was kind of a grifter in many ways. Why would he go to all this effort to kill King just on his own, out of his own sense of a desire to do it? The logic always was that there were other forces that were using him in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we don't know. I certainly don't know the bottom line, but I never believed the stories that he did act alone, and the trail of money that he received and the travel he did to Britain as a fugitive, all of those things just suggest that somebody with more money and more brains was at the center of that than James Earl Ray.
Right. He was not a person who had ever traveled abroad, as far as we know. He was a person who was very much a kind of a local of low-ranking kind of criminal. And for him to have suddenly figured out all the ways to get around, travel both to Canada, then on to Europe, he was in Portugal and England, these efforts to make these various trips showed a sophistication
mm-hmm.
that no one really understood how he would have had. But, of course, his story was first that he pled guilty, then tried to recant, and then went with his story that many people find hard to believe. So we never really got to the bottom of that case, as we didn't with so many other historical tragedies that we faced during that period.
Here's one more tune from U2 about Dr. Martin Luther King. This one is entitled simply MLK. And I think it's working here. There we go. Well, for some reason, I don't think that's making it through the channel here in my little jury rig situation. We're going to take a break and return here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And we're talking with Robert Perry Visit his site at consortiumnews.com. That's consortiumnews.com. We'll continue in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Make this the year you become personally acquainted with the May family and Jim's Restaurant at 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.50 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering, too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero & Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero & Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero & Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero & Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero & Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero & Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Go ahead, take a deep breath. Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system. Your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you. Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale. Listen to my show every Saturday from 3 to 5 p.m. 2 hours of in-depth talk on effective ways to help us get through life's greatest challenges, whatever the crisis. Addictions, illness, fears, breakups, money problems. I'll bring in the expert guests and we'll do it with some humor. The Sheila Show, brought to you by Sun Street Centers for alcohol and drug treatment. Go to www.sunstreetcenters.com.
We'll make things a little bit better. We will have to postpone our interview with Congressman Sestak to bring you a pre-recorded program for the next half hour, and then we'll try to fix things and get back on track. We continue now with Robert Perry from ConsortiumNews.com. And, Bob, you posted an item, and also our mutual friend and colleague Jason Leopold had a powerful piece at Consortium News this week all about the John Yoo torture memo. And the point that you make in a powerful essay is that this really speaks about the presidential power grab, and you raise the question about whether the next president will return to the parameters of the Constitution.
Right. I think what's now becoming clearer as more of these documents come out is that the Bush administration did have a view of an all-powerful president. Essentially, I've written that my analysis has been for some time that, in effect, the unalienable rights that the founders put into our Constitution and enunciated also through the Declaration of Independence, that those rights had been effectively removed. That we moved into a period after 9/11, in which the Bush administration asserted that the president had all power, plenary powers as they called it, that he could do anything to anyone, that he could strip any person he chose of their constitutional rights or human rights and do to them what he chose. And some people felt that was too extreme, but I think now we're seeing, as more of these memos come out, that is exactly what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And Yoo's memo is quite clear, and I'm just reading the full thing this afternoon. It's quite clear that their view of the sovereign, that Bush was considered the sovereign, and that at a time of war, the sovereign can do anything he wants in the prosecution of that war. And since this is a very unusual war, in that it's ill-defined, it's the war on terror, it's everywhere, and essentially nowhere. It has no time constraints. It's never going to be won. So if you take the logic of what's been enunciated through these administration memos about Bush having the right to strip the Bill of Rights and just throw it away, if he chooses to, if he wants to declare somebody an unlawful enemy combatant, that we are in effect in a different era, that there's no longer just a temporary step toward having some emergency measures, but that in effect the entire concept of our republic has all been altered. And so I do think it is important in looking at whoever becomes the next president, whether they will continue that, and also almost as importantly, whether the next appointee to the U.S. Supreme Court will join with the Alito, Roberts, Thomas and Scalia group and effectively vote in favor of this kind of imperial presidency. Because right now it is a 4-5 split on the U.S. Supreme Court, mm-hmm. on whether or not John Yoo's theories will be accepted or not. And so we're very close to really having a very major, a real change in a fundamental aspect of how this country has functioned for 230 years.
Well, I think it's a very important analysis, and I hope people will read it at consortiumnews.com. Robert Perry, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Peter.
All right. We're going to take a break here and try to work on the glitches in the system here. You'll hear Peter B. Collins' Best Of coming up in the next segment. And then as soon as we get things back on track, we'll be back live here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood Files, sponsored in part by Emerson. Whatever the demand, whatever the challenge, with Emerson you can consider it solved. And by Tylenol PM Rapid Release Gels. They combine the fast pain relief of Tylenol with a sleep aid that, used as directed, is non-habit forming. Feel better. Tylenol PM. I'm Charles Osgood. With all the antibiotic drugs being used today, not only to treat our infections, but also on farm animals, livestock of all kinds, you would think that the antibiotics would be building up in the soil, but it turns out they're not. And a new study, headed by a geneticist at the Harvard Medical School, has discovered the reason. It seems that there are germs in the soil that, instead of being killed by the antibiotics, actually eat antibiotics and thrive on them. In fact, some of these antibiotic eaters can get by on eating antibiotics and nothing else. The story after this. Qatar's 25 trillion cubic meters of natural gas could be the clean-burning answer to the world's energy needs. But Qatar Gas still has to get it to the world, and that's why businesses turn to Emerson. Emerson accurately predicts what world trends mean for them, so Emerson can supply the cutting-edge technologies that enable Qatar Gas to precisely control four of the largest natural gas production facilities ever built. Emerson anticipates customers' needs so that when they're ready, Emerson's ready. Emerson, consider it solved. Are you stopping by the grocery store today? Well, Tylenol PM wants you to know a good night's sleep could be in the bag, the grocery bag, that is. You've probably heard that turkey can help you feel sleepy. Well, so can oatmeal and bananas. When pain keeps you up, Tylenol PM can help, too. It works with your body to ease the pain and help you to sleep. And when used as directed, it's non-habit-forming. So put a good night's sleep on your grocery list. Feel better. Tylenol PM. A study published in the journal Science is a good example about how scientists looking for one thing often make a discovery about something else. Geneticist George Church and his team at Harvard Medical School had a grant from the Department of Energy to develop ways to find biofuels from agricultural waste. They wanted to see if there were microorganisms in the soil that could break down the toxins found in plants. So they gathered soil from 11 spots in Massachusetts, Minnesota, and Pennsylvania. What they found was hundreds of bacteria that could not just break down plant toxins, but also the antibiotics in the soil by eating them for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We know that bacteria can eat weird things. That's the basis for the field called remediation. Some germs are used now to break down oil spills. Well, Church's team found that some of these bacteria flourished when fed 18 different kinds of antibiotics, including most of the kinds that we humans use. Is this good news or bad? They say it could be either. It could be both. But we didn't even know until now that anti-antibiotic biotics even existed. The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Looking for ways to improve and beautify your landscape with sound environmental practices and enjoy seasonal produce from your own land? Well, Tree of Life Ecological Services offers landscaping and design to suit your specific garden needs, large or small. Contact Tree of Life Ecological Services at treeoflifees.com or call 831-566-EDEN. That's 566-3336.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after The Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
How can you sleep when our beds are burning, huh?
Out where the river broke, the bloodwood and the desert oak. Holding wrecks and boiling diesel, steam at 45 degrees.
The time has come to say fair's fair, to pay the rent, to pay our share. The time has come, a fact's a fact.
continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Mike Farrell is going to join us in just a moment. But up first, Claire in Davis wants to clue you in. Claire, thanks for calling the PBC show.
Hi, nice to talk with you.
My pleasure.
I just wanted to let everyone know that the people who are circulating those signature sheets for the proposition to divvy up the electoral votes for California only.
Yes, the Rudy Giuliani Grand Theft Program. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. They are doing it in a very fraudulent way. They're holding, for example, several clipboards with, I encountered one in San Luis Obispo last week, and the guy said, would you like to sign for getting health care for children?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, and what else do you have there? And he then confessed that he had the other one for divvying up the electoral votes for California.
And how did he describe it, though? What terms did he use?
I don't recall what he said.
You know, the Republican power grab thing?
What I've heard from other people is that they're just saying, oh, to get health care for more children, sign here, sign here, sign here.
Mm-hmm. There's actually a videotape at Courage Campaign's website of an incident like that at the university there at San Luis Obispo.
Yes.
I think it was at Cal Poly. And there's a guy out gathering signatures, and he tried to pull the same kind of a maneuver, saying, here's one to end cancer, and sign this other one. It's something about government reform.
Yeah, that was it, government reform.
Yeah. So we do need to be very careful because it hasn't made the February or June ballots. They've missed those deadlines. But they're deadly serious about going forward. It would mean 22 electoral votes almost automatically for the Republican, whoever it is.
Exactly. And the way I understand the Republicans are trying to go about that is to get it approved in November and then go back with a lawsuit and get the votes divvied out retroactively.
Yeah, I'd have to see the language of the measure to see how it could go into effect, because most ballot measures take effect on the following January 1st, some of them even, if they're fiscal, July 1st for the next fiscal year. And so how you can pass a ballot measure that has an impact on the very presidential votes taken on the same day strikes me as a legal stretch, but of course I never went to law school.
Well, and who is beyond legal stretches these days?
Thank you, Claire.
Bye.
Great to talk with you. Mike Farrell, you may remember him from MASH. He also was on the Providence Show and has been an activist for many years. He chronicles his activism in a book called Just Call Me Mike, A Journey to Actor and Activist. Welcome back to the show, Mike Farrell.
Thanks, Peter. Nice to be with you again.
Well, you know, I'm really delighted to talk with you. I've said this before. We often used to only talk at very difficult times when we had a pending execution down the road from me at San Quentin. And there are really some encouraging things going on that surprise me. This week, the Supreme Court has ruled finally about the disparities between these mandatory sentences for crack cocaine as compared to the suburban white people who use powder cocaine.
Right.
And the court gave a very clear ruling authorizing federal judges to do what's called a downward departure. In other words, to use their discretion and say the facts before me do not support the sentencing formula that the law is trying to force upon this court. And it is giving judges the discretion that they used to enjoy. And coming from the Roberts Court in a 7-2 vote, I almost fell out of my chair, Mike.
Who were the two?
Alito and Thomas.
Alito and Thomas.
Yeah.
Scalia went along with this.
Yeah, apparently Martha Greenhouse was on the I think that's her name, from the National Law Review on the NewsHour on PBS. And she said that this kind of transcends liberal-conservative because there are long-running issues about the latitude that judges should have.
Right.
And that Roberts, in particular, has been a believer in, permitting judges to actually compose a sentence that fits the situation presented in the case.
Well, good for them. I'm not quite sure how much credibility to put into the implication that now judges will do the right thing, because we all know that there are a lot of judges who are not going to take advantage of this and will simply continue to hand out the terribly stiff sentences inappropriately.
Well, your comment is right on target. In the analytical piece in the New York Times accompanying the news article of the court's decision, the headline reads, "Given the leniency to show leniency, judges may not." And considering the way the courts have been packed over the last 20 years,
right.
Clinton really didn't put any liberals on, so we've just had conservatives and alleged moderates appointed to the federal bench, and it really has taken a toll.
Yes, it has.
Yeah.
Yes, it has.
So, Mike, I want to turn next to the situation in New Jersey, because you've been very active in opposing capital punishment in this country, and I appreciate all the work you've done and the organization Death Penalty Focus that you're involved with. And in New Jersey, the state of the Sopranos, they're on the verge of repealing capital punishment. This is a signal development.
Well, from your mouth to God's ear, Peter, as you know, the state Senate yesterday voted to abolish, which was the thing that all of us have been very, very closely watching and cringing about. The Senate is reputed to be the tougher of the two bodies to get this measure through, and since they have now passed it, the lower house will vote on it, I think, in the next week or two.
That's right. It's supposed to be later this week.
Is it?
In the General Assembly.
Oh, they're moving it right up. Oh, good.
Thursday is what the news account says.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And then former Senator and now Governor Corzine has long been an opponent of the death penalty, and there's no question that he'll sign it if presented to him. So that will make New Jersey the first state in the modern era since the reinstatement of the death penalty in 1976 to abolish the death system by law. Now, New York has arguably done the same thing, only in that the state high court held that the law as drafted was unconstitutional, and the legislature has decided it did not want to make the necessary changes. So they have done the same thing, but through a kind of backdoor political process.
A court-driven default mechanism.
That's right.
Well, I'll take it any way we can get it.
I'm with you. And, you know, hopefully, Sister Prejean has made a statement that she hopes this is the beginning of an avalanche of such actions. And I think all of us hope for the same thing. But in fact, we've seen some significant movement in various parts of the country. Nebraska's state legislature voted, came within one vote of striking down the death penalty there. Montana, of all places, came within one vote of striking down the death penalty there. And as you may recall, in I think it was 1980, the New Hampshire legislature, both houses, voted to repeal the death penalty, and they were vetoed. It was vetoed by then-Governor Shaheen because, in my view, because she wanted to be Al Gore's vice presidential nominee.
So these are encouraging signs, and there's a separate track. I don't want to confuse people, but the California death penalty is on hold due to federal court review. And the Supreme Court, which we referred to in the other case a moment ago, has effectively put executions on hold as they evaluate the legality of lethal injection as a method of state-sponsored killing. And so we are kind of backing into an almost accidental moratorium on executions in this country.
Yeah, effectively we are in we've been, as you suggest, in California in a state of moratorium judicially imposed, and now we are that way across the country as a result of the Supreme Court's action. And I have to suggest, looking at it realistically, I can't imagine that this Supreme Court is going to strike down the death penalty. In fact, it's not even at issue. What's at issue is whether or not lethal injection is cruel and unusual punishment, and therefore constitutionally barred. I can't believe that, frankly, they're going to find it to be that, but it'll be interesting to see what their finding is.
Well, given the situation where they have been forced to accept cases for review at the Supreme Court level, again, on the method, not the underlying legality of the execution itself, if they find that lethal injection is cruel and unusual, perhaps they'll try to change the formula of how these cocktails, it's a series of drugs that are administered, are selected and applied. But there is the possibility here that this could kind of wobble in an unexpected way and lead them to have to reevaluate the other methods, from hanging to firing squads to electrocution and the gas chamber. And, you know, when you look at each of these individually, you really can't find one that you would call humane.
No, of course. They're really, I mean, it's oxymoronic to think that we can find a humane way to kill somebody. The likelihood, in my view, of this Supreme Court ruling that lethal injection is unacceptable is, I think, slim to none. However, I think that what they may do is either impose some restrictions on it, offer some suggestions, or do something in a way to turn it back to the states that's going to allow for a continuation of challenges, which may portend a long period of time before we see another execution. And I'm hoping that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
The one option that is available, readily available, and in fact used by the state of Oregon and a couple of others, is simply an overdose of barbiturates, wherein the individual goes to sleep. The problem, evidently, that the legal community sees with that, or at least the prosecutorial side sees with that, is that there is the possibility that an individual will react to it in a way that is unbecoming, and therefore the witnesses will be made uncomfortable. That, and it takes a good deal of time. And in a very, very, very minor number of cases, doesn't do it. So
mm-hmm.
there are some concerns, I suppose, about that. The one that I find sort of grotesque is the fact that it's mostly about the comfort of the witnesses rather than than concerned about the person who is actually being put to death.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and we suffer from excessive righteousness in this country, where people can rationalize incredible things in the name of their safety or vengeance or some sort of biblical sense of justice.
Mm.
And so we can't discount the extremes to which they will go.
No,
to preserve the death penalty. And just look at Mike Huckabee. Here he is, a Southern Baptist minister who, you know, has shown some compassion to prisoners on parole. He's being dinged for one that he, you know, facilitated the release, and then he committed another grisly crime after that release, a Willie Horton, if you will.
Right.
And Huckabee is going out of his way, kind of like Clinton did, to really affirm that, by God, and I said that advisedly, by God, I believe in the death penalty.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is sad to see this kind of churlishness on the part of people who are supposed to be leaders. But that's what we've come to today. And I think your point is well taken, Peter, as always. But and probably your greatest example of it is this business about torture today. That we have so reduced our ourselves in the eyes of the world, but our politicians continue to sort of slip and slide and try to slither around without declaring themselves one way or the other, when in fact we are torturing human beings and putting and therefore endangering our own troops, putting them in a position where, if captured, they might receive the same treatment.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and return with Mike Farrell. Pick up his new book. It's still out there in hardcover. Just Call Me Mike, A Journey to Actor and Activist. If you have a question or comment about capital punishment and efforts to ban it, give us a call now, toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. It's 888-573-8372. You can always email me, peter@peterbcollins.com.
Do you want some downtime? A break from work and worry without breaking the bank? At the Dunes and the Spa at Pajaro Dunes in Watsonville will give you the breathing space you need. The Spa at Pajaro Dunes is now open to the general public. Spend an hour being pampered with a warm stone massage or European facial. Gather your friends together for a spa party, or surprise your sweetie with a couples massage. Stay for a long, lazy weekend in a luxurious condo at the dunes with 150 acres of beach and wetlands. You'll have your own ocean view, and the price is unbeatable. Only a short drive from anywhere on the Central Coast, relief is only minutes away without the time and expense of a long trip. We'll also simplify your wedding plans. Have your ceremony, guests, and special events all in the same place. In nearby Watsonville, at the dunes, and the spa at Pajaro Dunes will make your life a little easier and a lot more enjoyable. Call 888-91-DUNES and mention KRXA to get our lowest rates. That's 888-91-DUNES.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
Come fly with me, let's fly away.
This is Barbara Mossberg, your host of the Poetry Slowdown. I'm inviting you to join me for a poetry reading I'm giving to support this show of my poems of 30 years called Fat Lady Flying. Me, a quivering wreck getting on a plane, yet hoping futilely to get the part of Peter Pan or the Witch and Wizard of Oz, too plump to hoist into the harness. I release my inner witch and invite you to come fly with me April 11th, 12th, and 13th at the Cherry Center in Carmel, Friday and Saturday nights at 8, to Sunday matinee, right after our show here. I told my 5-year-old son and mom, if you promise to let me write this down, I will buy you an ice cream. Well, if you come, I'll buy you ice cream and a chapbook of this poem, which you will see enacted before your eyes with blues songs by Anne Marie Hunter. Go to Ticket Guys online or call the Cherry Center in Carmel, 624-7491. That's 624-7491. And I'll see you on stage, on the page, and right here, Sundays, making the morning last.
Fly with me, let's fly away.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. This portion is brought to you by the Organic Wine Company. You eat organic, so you should drink organic wine, too. Log on to ecowine.com or call them toll-free at 888-ECO-WINE. We're talking about efforts to ban the death penalty in this country. Activist Mike Farrell is with us. One more mention, his new book is called Just Call Me Mike. I really enjoyed it. Came out earlier this year. And we started off talking about the move forward in New Jersey, where it does appear that the legislature will approve a bill banning capital punishment, and Governor Corzine is definitely going to sign it if it does clear the legislature. And, Mike, you were talking about the federal policies on torture just before the break.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so unseemly and amoral and immoral all at the same time to see these efforts. Okay, so we know that the CIA destroyed tapes of these torture interrogations, and now they trot out an officer who says, well, yeah, I was part of the team that did that, wasn't actually present, but gosh, in just 35 seconds of pretend drowning, Abu Zubaydah decided to cough up the water and then cough up every bit of information we asked him for. And first of all, I find that hard to believe. These are hardened terrorist activists who would tell us what they think we want to hear, but not necessarily what we want to know. And this case officer is on television saying, well, gosh, you know, now that I think about it, maybe waterboarding is torture and maybe we shouldn't do that. All I can tell you is that in 2002 I was desperate and this worked. And they're trying to rationalize that the end justifies the means.
Exactly. And every study, every really serious study of torture has demonstrated just as you just indicated, what they get from torture victims is anything they want to hear, whether it's true or not. And that in so many instances, these things are justified by this sort of ticking bomb scenario or the any way they can come up with to justify this means to this grotesque means to the end that they think they want to achieve. But it is really incredibly demeaning to everybody involved, and it is damaging to not only our stature in the world, which has been decimated by these people, but it's also it opens the door for exactly this kind of practice to be used against any of our own personnel who are falling into enemies' hands.
Yeah.
It is inexcusable in my view, and it seems to me that it's fairly clearly known that the really serious interrogators will tell you that any good interrogator can get information out of a captive without the use of this kind of treatment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so this is part of a full piece, Mike Farrell, where we have these people who pose as the keepers of public morality, and they want to prevent us from moving forward in stem cell research on the phony argument that the culture of life requires that we preserve these embryos that were going to be trashed anyway.
Right.
And then we have the duality, I would consider it hypocrisy, over the war and occupation in Iraq. That this can be justified by people who claim that they are religious and defending, you know, our religious values.
There's a kind of, gymnastic quality to the logic of some of these people that is amazing to me, Peter. On a brighter note, can I just add,
mm-hmm.
in terms of talking about what's going on in the various states, here in California, the Commission on the Fair Administration of Justice has been in operation for the last couple of years, looking at the way in which our system works and where it can and should be amended to help make it more fair and more appropriate.
It's chaired by former Attorney General Van de Kamp.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it is fairly evenly divided on in terms of prosecutors and defense and people who are in favor of more tough and application of the law and some people who are in support of the death penalty and some who are opposed to it. Next year, beginning in January, they're going to begin looking at California's application of the death penalty, and it's very important for your listeners, anybody who's interested in knowing, that the first hearing will be held and open to the public in the Bay Area, I believe, in early January. So,
okay.
Something for us all to be aware of, that they're going to be looking at our system of capital punishment here, and what can and or should be done to either make it more effective or perhaps take a more serious look at whether or not it's necessary.
Yeah. Well, keep us posted on that. When you have more precise information, we'll be happy to spread the word.
Great.
And Van de Kamp was on our program a couple of months ago after the governor vetoed a couple of pieces of legislation that had been put forward by the commission and adopted by the legislature. One that was going to require a recording, audio tape or videotape, of any interrogations. And we, you know, Van de Kamp was very clear and blunt in his criticism of the governor, just saying there is no excuse except the intervention of the prison guards union.
The political considerations are always what seem to make the difference in these things, and the governor has caved one more time to the whim of the CCPOA.
Right. Well, we'll also watch the actions of Judge Vogel in San Jose, who is the one who's put the hold on executions in California, and see how that goes forward. Mike Farrell, thanks for joining us. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Always nice to talk to you, Peter.
Right,
thanks
take
very
care.
Much.
That's Mike Farrell. Again, his new book is called Just Call Me Mike. We're going to take a break and return for more here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You can visit our website for a podcast of this hour or any hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. Go to peterbcollins.com. Our program is produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Brian Urban is on duty today taking your phone calls. Talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, explain the value of wines made from organic grapes.
You know, I think that drinking organic wines is what Tony Robbins described as a class one experience. Wines made with organic grapes feel good. They taste extremely good, just like an organic tomato or strawberry tastes usually better than a conventional counterpart. They are good. There's plenty of scientific evidence about the health benefits of drinking wine in moderation. Drinking organic wines also is good for other people in that you know you're supporting farmers. And last but not least, it's definitely good then for the higher good.
The Organic Wine Company. Log on to ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE toll-free. That's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
A dismal jobs report.
It kind of rings the bell for the start of a recession in the U.S. economy.
Severe storm sweep the South.
We all just sat down on the floor in one big group and just held on.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney.
Things are going downhill. You know, there's just nothing out there available.
For George Warren of Anderson, Indiana, today's Labor Department report is more than numbers. He's been out of work for 2 months.
I'm just looking for a job. You know, I have a family to support, and I'm just wanting to get out there and earn a living.
In March, 80,000 American jobs disappeared, and the unemployment rate rose to 5.1%. Stuart Hoffman, chief economist at PNC Financial Services, says this confirms we've slipped into a recession, but he predicts it will be short and shallow.
The economy right now in the opening quarter, we're certainly struggling and we'll probably continue to do some struggling until we get into the summer months and maybe the housing market begins to find a bottom.
The employment report weakened the dollar, which in turn pushed up the price of crude oil. It settled in New York above $106 a barrel. The Dow closed 16 points lower at 12,602, but it's up more than 3% for the week. Now this.
Go, come on, get it going. I'm excited about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good, doesn't it?
You look good in it.
Feel good.
Yeah.
God, that's sweet.
That's 22 horsepower?
Yeah.
It's better than my car.
It's time for tractor love. This weekend at the Home Depot Try Before You Buy event, test drive brands like Toro, Cub Cadet, and John Deere, plus get...
Tell me what you want.
Dell has people talking, like the customer who wrote exactly what small businesses have needed for years. Need savings too? Take $250 off on a select Dell Vostro desktop with a 20-inch widescreen flat panel monitor featuring Intel Core 2 Duo processor. Put Dell to work for your small business at Dell.com/radio. Prices do not include taxes and other fees. Limited time offer. U.S. only, subject to change.
Severe thunderstorms have raked across parts of Arkansas, Mississippi, and Alabama.
The door blew open, and a few seconds after that, we just heard a huge bang, and this shook the house.
The wind, possibly including tornadoes, smashed homes, toppled trees, and cut power. But Mike Womack, Mississippi's emergency management director, says the worst is yet to come.
Flooding in the next few days is going to be a significant problem for us.
That region is already oversaturated.
We were already at flood stage on the Mississippi River, and the tributaries to the Mississippi in our state were starting to approach flood stage. And the large amount of rain that this system's bringing in is certainly going to contribute to the problems we're having there.
At the horizon of a floating casino hotel in Vicksburg, Mississippi, security guard Buford Chris tells us it's rocking, literally, but no one seems to mind.
Everybody's happy because they're gambling, trying to win money.
But with the strong wind, they might want to make a second trip to the buffet.
You'd be pretty swept off your feet if you're not, you know, a very heavy set person.
The news came just about this time on April 4th, 1968, reported on CBS television by anchorman Walter Cronkite.
Dr. Martin Luther King, the apostle of nonviolence in the civil rights movement, has been shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee. Police have issued an all-points bulletin for a well-dressed young white man seen running from the scene.
King was killed by a single shot as he stood on a motel balcony. Today, there was a memorial. CBS News correspondent Jim Crisula was there.
Thousands gathered outside the Lorraine Motel, where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was killed 40 years ago, and the debate raged over whether Dr. King's dream is still alive. Bevelyn Henderson is a school counselor.
I think it's still alive. It needs working on, and we have to do a lot more as black people, but I think the dream is still alive.
Many older African Americans complain black youth are refusing to live out Dr. King's dream and message of nonviolence. Jim Frisula, CBS News, Memphis.
The anniversary was topic A on the campaign trail.
Through his faith, his courage, and his wisdom, Dr. Martin Luther King moved an entire nation. He preached the gospel of brotherhood, of equality, and justice.
Because of Dr. King, these young people, my daughter's generation, grew up taking for granted that children of all colors could attend school together.
I'd remind you that we can all be a little late sometimes in doing the right thing. And Dr. King understood this about his fellow Americans.
John McCain told a black audience that he was wrong years ago to oppose the national holiday honoring King. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
At Mercedes-Benz, we've recently engineered a great new way for you to own a Mercedes-Benz. It's called the Mercedes-Benz Certified Pre-Owned Event. Every certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz features an extensive 155-point inspection and lifetime roadside assistance, so you know it's all Mercedes-Benz through and through. Get limited-time financing now through April 30th. And remember, if it's not at your authorized Mercedes dealer, it's not a certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz.
See dealer for complete details and warranty coverage and roadside assistance. Abbreviated inspection applicable to vehicles less than 15 months old or less than 18,000 miles.
Tell me what you want. Dell has people talking, like the customer who wrote, "There is no other choice when it comes to quality, performance, and value." Value like saving $220 now on a select Dell Vostro laptop featuring Intel Core 2 Duo processor. Put Dell to work for your small business at Dell.com/radio. Prices do not include taxes and other fees. Limited time offer. U.S. only, subject to change.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Put down that weapon.
A political message from Australia's Midnight Oil. It's called Put Down That Weapon. This hour, we're going to start off talking about the remarkable announcement earlier this week of the new National Intelligence Estimate with a 180-degree revision of our estimation of Iran's development of nuclear weapons. And joining me as usual here is Scott Dick. He's our contributor on military and veterans issues. He served in the Marine Corps and then retired as a major from the United States Army. Scott, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm trying to stay dry, but for the most part, I'm okay.
Good, good. And just a quick mention that Scott is launching a new radio broadcast that'll follow my program every weeknight on KRXA 540 in Monterey, and that kicks off next week. Congratulations and best wishes to you, Scott.
Thanks, Peter. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to following you.
Well, it's going to be very interesting, and I'm glad to see you taking over some time on the airwaves to talk about the issues that you care about and know a lot about. Got some reinforcements for us today. Mel Goodman returns to our program. He has been on with us many times before. He is a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy, and he served at the Central Intelligence Agency as a senior intelligence analyst from 1966 to about 1990. Mel, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Peter. Good to be with you again.
Well, it's nice to talk with you. And first up, guys, I want to share with you that because of the revised intelligence, CNN has had to make a scheduling change. they were planning to broadcast a two-hour special called We Were Warned, Iran Goes Nuclear, and it was going to be broadcast on December 12th, and they have had to retool it. They've pulled the program. It included some elements that were set partially in the future, some sort of a scenario scheme that was going to be displayed, including former government officials playing fictional cabinet members. And that's going to be replaced by some sort of a special hosted by Campbell Brown, whose husband is Dan Senor, S-E-N-O-R, who, of course, was a spokesman for the Bremer occupation force in Iraq and is very close with the White House. So we can get some real objective reporting there. Now, other than the CNN changes, Mel Goodman, what other kinds of changes do you think are dictated by this stunning new national intelligence estimate?
Well, as you say, it's stunning, and it's good to see CNN being flexible and cerebral, but I don't see that in the White House. Now, here are the basic changes that have to be made. I think the White House, and particularly Dick Cheney and Stephen Hadley, the National Security Advisor, will have to take U.S. military attacks off the table. I don't think this is a reasonable option. I never thought it was in the first place, but certainly it's no option now. Two, I think the United States has to rethink its sanctions policy, and that's on two levels. One, unilateral sanctions, which we've passed through the Congress, which I think were going to be very difficult to get through the Congress again, but more importantly, because of the international dimension and the lack of any real international credibility for the Bush administration because of the lies over Iraq, is the whole issue of international sanctions and UN sanctions. We got resolutions through in 2006 and 2007. I don't think we can do that again. Three, I think we have to be concerned that we have an intelligence community, as you say, shifted 180 degrees, but both in 2005 and 2007, they reached their judgments with high confidence. I can understand the confidence this time around because I've talked to enough people in the intelligence community to know that the evidence is very strong, but it'll be very hard for the intelligence community to defend their high confidence in 2005 when they said that Iran was on its way with a nuclear weapons program, and more importantly, they said no amount of international pressure would work. In other words, deterrence would be a failure. Now, of course, they have high confidence about deterrence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think three... or I guess this would be four.
Well, who's counting?
Yeah, right. Who's counting when you've got issues of war and peace at stake?
Yeah.
You have certain concerns on the part of the neocons and their Israeli supporters who will stay concerned over Iran's nuclear capabilities. Norman Podhoretz is already saying that this is just a deception on the part of Iran and the CIA is out to undercut President Bush. And then finally, the change that we need to see that we see no sign of whatsoever is the need for strategic diplomacy. Let's face it, the non-recognition policy of Iran that goes back now nearly 30 years has been a failure. And to hold the conference in Annapolis a couple of weeks ago, for example, and not invite Iran, which is one of the most important players in the region, makes no sense. So
mm-hmm.
We need a lot of change, but from this administration in the next 400 days, I don't expect to see very much of anything.
And Mel Goodman, Dick Cheney and George Bush don't really have a lot of humility, and the idea of a mea culpa seems quite foreign to them.
I wouldn't hold my breath waiting for that one.
But don't you think as a nation that we owe some apology to the Iranian nation for demonizing them and for lying? You know, we know that that Seymour Hersh has told us that he heard the first inklings of this new revised intelligence estimate almost a year ago. So it had to trickle up to Bush and Cheney much sooner than Bush has acknowledged last week and much sooner than has now been reported, which is August, when Mike McConnell allegedly went to Bush and said, some new information coming in, but don't ask me any questions about it.
Right. Now, of course, the White House already, within 24 hours, changed that one. They made the president, well, the president actually made himself look foolish when he said he was told by the director of national intelligence, I have new information, but he didn't understand or didn't get what that new information was. That shows Bush's staff is absent without leave.
Well, now, Mel, wait a minute.
It's rather idiotic.
Mel, it was August. Bush takes August off.
August, right. So this was, I assume, a conversation at the ranch.
Yeah.
And of course, that's when he was told about bin Laden determined to attack the United States. That was
right.
Also in August.
And yeah.
As you say, that's the month that Bush takes off. So none of that is really credible, but the important thing is he had that information, but nevertheless talked about World War III in an irresponsible speech he gave in October, and Cheney, who had the same information that Bush did, because they both get the president's daily brief, which only goes to about six or seven people in Washington, they knew all of this information, but here is Cheney talking about serious consequences if Iran continues its nuclear weapons program. Well, they stopped it in 2003, and I think there we have very good evidence.
Mm-hmm. Scott Dick, you and I have been talking about the saber-rattling toward Iran for well over a year now. What was your reaction when you first heard about this revised NIE?
Well, I thought perhaps maybe the intelligence community had finally come to their senses. You know, they're easily manipulable by Bush and Cheney, and I guess they appeal to their patriotism and their honor, as the government always does when they're trying to get soldiers and you know, people like that to do more work with less money. So maybe this time they weren't falling for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It made them all look bad. It made them look terribly incompetent. And we spend billions, and I think the American people, rightfully so, said, why are we spending all this money when they can't even get little, you know, the big stuff right? What is it for?
Mm-hmm. Now, Mel Goodman, the Bush administration is claiming that this turnabout is evidence of the reform of intelligence and the restructuring under the intelligence czar, first Negroponte and now McConnell. And on the other hand, it appears to me that the intelligence community somehow was able to deliver an ultimatum that they were not going to be used again to falsely lead us into a military confrontation, and that this information was going to come out one way or the other. And Cheney, I imagine a conversation. Cheney, you can own it, or you can be defensive about it. What's your choice? What's your speculation, Mel, on how this actually evolved?
Well, my sense is that reform of the intelligence community had nothing to do with this. Restructuring had nothing to do with this. And I have felt all along that to look at wiring diagrams as an answer to our problems is to look in the wrong place. The problem will only be solved when you have people with courage and with conviction and know what the job of an intelligence officer is, and that it's all about having a moral compass and telling truth to power. And here, the real hero in this is a deputy to the Director of National Intelligence, a former State Department bureaucrat by the name of Thomas Finger. And I think what Thomas did was to allow the working analyst at the middle levels of the government just do their job, and therefore catch up to what the international arms inspectors, particularly at the International Atomic Energy Agency, and what the British, French, and German intelligence analysts, and even the Russian intelligence analysts, because remember, President Putin was in Iran about 6 weeks ago and says there is no evidence of a nuclear weapons program. And of course, when you're talking about who the White House should apologize to, I would only start with Iran. We owe apologies all around the international community, because what the CIA is doing now is just catching up to what has been the conventional wisdom and the consensus within international intelligence circle. So again, it doesn't matter how you structure this intelligence community. If you don't have honest people, it's not going to make any difference. But if you do have honest people, it doesn't matter how bad the structure is. And here, this is a case of good people, honest people, people who understood what the mission of intelligence is, simply doing their jobs.
But Mel, how did Cheney permit this? this is what is really leading me to wonder if there is some kind of a trap here or some other surprise that I can't quite see.
I don't see a trap. I think what's been happening, and it's been going on for the past year, and in many ways, and I'm probably the last person who wants to admit this, but the appointment of Bob Gates as Secretary of Defense, I think, was a turning point. And that was a year ago, December 2006, was his confirmation battle, and I fought his nomination.
Yeah, you're not a leader of the Gates fan club.
No, I think, as I say, I do this with no great enthusiasm, but I have to do it, I think, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Bush was put into the Pentagon. Rumsfeld was forced to resign because, actually, he believed that the war was a failure, and he was looking for ways to essentially reduce the war.
Right.
But Bush really turned to his father this case, and his father said, get Bob Gates. He was the only person who George Bush was going to consider. If Bob Gates had turned down the job, which I don't think he could, but if he did turn down the job, I think Rumsfeld may have been left in the Pentagon. There were no other candidates.
Peter, let me jump in here.
Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
But let me just finish one point.
Go ahead, Mel.
Cheney has lost a lot of his soldiers. I mean, he's lost Scooter Libby. He's lost Douglas Feith. He's lost a lot of the neocons in government. Paul Wolfowitz is gone. All of the people who've been with Cheney for a very long time. So he's lost a lot of his soldiers.
Go ahead, Scott.
When was the NIE released?
Monday of this week.
This is very interesting, Peter, because what we're going to play later are clips from Casey's briefing on Tuesday, the very next day. I think this is where the intelligence agencies and the military have come together and said enough is enough. And I think when you listen to the clips, Peter, you'll know what I'm talking about, because he comes out and says we are deploying at an unsustainable rate. And it's in an open session at the Brookings Institution, and the Pentagon Channel put it out there for everybody to listen to.
All right, we're going to get that later this hour with Scott's commentary.
Can I just
commentary.
Say something, because I really agree with Scott on this point. I think the battle that's going on, the clandestine battle that's going on in Washington, is between the White House and the National Security Council against the uniformed military. And it's been interesting to watch what the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Michael Mullen, has been saying, and the head of CENTCOM, our forces in the Middle East, Admiral Fallon, who are opposed to the use of military force in Iran. And you have to give Gates credit. He appointed both these people. Rumsfeld never would have appointed these people, and they never would have endorsed the comments they've been making that not only include we don't need another war, in this case Iran, and references to Iran cutting its deliveries of roadside explosives and munitions to Iraqi forces. So there is something going on, and I agree that it's the uniformed military leading the way with a great deal of courage, which they didn't have in 2002 and 2003 when we immorally went to war against Iraq.
That's Mel Goodman along with Scott Dick. I'm Peter B. Collins. More in a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Let me welcome you to Planet Cruise.
Well, this Friday, April 4th, it's an all-new Planet Cruise Comedy Hour with me, Richard Stockton.
And I don't just sleep in my car. I wake up in the neighborhood of my choice.
Along with comedian Bent Washburn.
I love the prospect of a mountain lion eating a billionaire. There's just something fair about that.
Ukulele Dick.
Ukulele Dick.
The Great Morgani.
Dr. Rupert Opie.
Simone Cox.
They let the players out.
Chris Magyar. Zach Friend.
All comedically capturing the spirit of Santa Cruz. And this is an all-new show, so get your tickets early.
Ooh, save $5.
At Streetlight Records and Gateway's Books.
They won't let you spray for people.
That's this Friday, April 4th at 8 p.m. at the Columba in Santa Cruz.
It's Planet Cruz.
You're going to laugh your glutes off.
Well, good afternoon. Happy Friday. Checking traffic on KRXA and pretty quiet for a Friday. Just a couple of things out there. Starting off northbound 1 after Carpenter Street in Carmel. A broken down car that ties up the left-hand lane there. Down in Greenfield, south 101 after Underwood Road, we have a solo spin-out that's being reported in the center divide. CHP just arriving on the scene. Highway 17, as you make your way through the Santa Cruz Mountains, currently checks in Stalin accident-free. Southbound 17 making your way onto southbound 1 in Santa Cruz, already seeing some heavy traffic there. Highway 68, it's been great this afternoon. No stalls, no accidents. 101 through Salinas, a pretty good drive right now as well. And this is brought to you by JCPenney. This Friday and Saturday, it's the JCPenney huge sale with Mammoth Doorbusters. Saturday only, 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Go to jcp.com now to see the deals. JCPenney. If you spot a traffic problem out there, give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix. That's traffic on KRXA.
The Peter B. Collins Show continues. I'm glad you're listening. Scott Dick is with us as usual, our regular contributor on military and veterans issues. And we're joined this half hour by Mel Goodman, a former CIA analyst. And Mel, you published an op-ed in the Baltimore Sun today. People can find it at baltimoresun.com. And you wrote this line: Mr. Bush and Mr. Cheney were aware of the new findings, that's in the National Intelligence Estimate, before they used their provocative language. And, of course, the dates were in October when Bush talked about World War III, and Cheney said, quote, we will not allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon. So what did these guys know? When did they know it? And how long have they been lying?
Well, they had to know this information over the summer because that's when the most sensitive information came in, even though I'm told there was good information available in the spring. But by the summer, I think there was no arguing with the conclusions that they had stopped the program going back 4 years. So they were briefed through the most sensitive journal that the CIA produces, which is the President's Daily Brief, which goes to the President, the Vice President, Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, and the National Security Advisor, and maybe one or two others, including the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs. So over the summer, they have known this, but still went ahead with this provocative language, which I find unconscionable, and it shows the degree to which Cheney is willing to put aside all law, all rational thinking to achieve his purposes, which I think is to look for another military front. The fact that we're losing two wars already in Afghanistan and Iraq probably means nothing to him.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking for a way for another military engagement, essentially to save the Bush presidency.
Well, given the way the sabers were rattled, particularly by Cheney, was this a last-ditch effort by intelligence to stop us from rushing headlong into a military conflict with Iran based on bad intelligence, which is just a terrible replay of Iraq?
No, I think people overestimate the degree to which policy decisions get involved in the timing of intelligence estimates. It may look that way, but I think most of this timing is serendipitous.
Mm-hmm.
I think the intelligence estimate was going along on its own course, which was a very slow one because of the sensitivity of the issue and not wanting to appear to be sticking a finger in the eye of the president and the vice president over a very sensitive matter. But I think the intelligence community stuck with its brief, plotted along as they usually do in a very incremental way, and they produced this report in December, I think months after they had the information. But it is supportive of what I think the Secretary of State would prefer, and probably the Secretary of Defense would prefer, and certainly what the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs would prefer,
mm-hmm.
which was to avoid another military engagement, this one with an Iran, which would be a far more difficult foe than the one we face in Iraq, where we're facing one of the longest wars in the history of the United States.
Yeah, Scott, do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Mel, what would you like to add? We have about a minute remaining regarding this remarkable shift in our...
Well, I think there's some loose ends here that aren't being addressed. And it's, once again, to go back to an intelligence issue, it's really important that the Senate and the House Intelligence Committees bring in the major players at the CIA within the intelligence community to find out why it took 4 years to reverse their thinking on the nuclear weapons program, despite the beginning of evidence that did come in, and why 2 years ago they were saying with very poor evidence, they were saying with high confidence, this is exactly what Iran was doing, building a nuclear weapons program, and that they couldn't be deterred. So I think in terms of methodology, we should give the CIA some credit and some willingness to tell truth to power, but they obviously haven't fixed all of the problems of the CIA because 4 years is too long to get the story out, and 2 years to be reversing themselves, as you say, 180 degrees different, both times having high confidence, something is wrong with that kind of analytical methodology.
Yeah.
I think, Peter, they just waited until after the 2004 election. If
well,
they would have announced that before, that the fear factor would have gone down.
Well, it would have been the 06, yeah, the midterm last year. Let's take a break, and we'll return with Scott Dick. Mel Goodman, thank you for your counsel today.
Thank you, Peter. It's always good being with you. Good night, Scott.
Good night, Mel.
More in a moment, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And Scott Dick's going to share some tape of General Casey's comments.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Should she surrender? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Hillary Clinton has now come full circle from courage under fire to punchline.
Yeah, I was pinned down by sniper fire.
Really? Right out of here? Not that she was lying about that Bosnia trip or even misleading. It was, what was it?
A mismatch of words and actions.
A mismatch of words and actions. Like when your carpeting doesn't match your furniture. You don't say your carpet lied to your sofa. Now, you see, hasn't this been a welcome change from the relentless discussion of issues? But now, many Democrats want Hillary Clinton to give up because it's getting too ugly, because she's become Pinocchio, or more properly, Pinocchia. And the skywriting is clear. Surrender Hillary, it says. Concede now, or it'll destroy the party. And you know what? This talk drives me nuts. Is it ugly? Of course it's ugly. It's politics. We tend to forget what politics is. Politics is what we do instead of shooting each other. Politicians are warriors. They're armed with words instead of RPGs, but they are descended from warriors, and they have a warrior mentality. The genius of America is that we have harnessed that warrior instinct and taken the violence out of it. But the emotions are there. You can't pasteurize them. This is about power. I can never understand why the same people who lament the failure of politics in Iraq can't accept the success of politics here. And if the Democratic Party can't withstand this, if it can't withstand Bill Clinton's finger-wagging and Hillary Clinton's tall tales, then how is it ready to survive a world where people actually shoot at each other? Now this.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and hackers invade your business every day through email, instant messaging, web browsing, and your company's website. With no software to install and no per-user license fees, Barracuda Network firewalls are easy to set up and affordable. Do what 50,000 other companies have done. Reclaim your network with a Barracuda Network firewall. For a free evaluation unit, call Barracuda Networks, 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the secret garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955. Or visit the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel's only bookstore, and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Love.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Oh, man, look at my life. 24 and there's so much more. Live alone in a paradise that makes me think of two. Love lost, such a cost. Give me things that don't get lost, like a coin that won't get tossed, rolling home to you.
No particular reason for this Neil Young song. I just like it. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We continue now with Scott Dick, our regular contributor on military and veterans issues. I want to thank Mel Goodman for sharing his intelligence. After all, he served at the CIA for almost 15 years and has a great authority when it comes to those issues. Scott, anything you want to follow up on related to the national intelligence estimate before we move on to General Casey's comments?
Well, I was just saying that, Peter, at the break, if our intelligence agencies were honest and fast, I think we would have heard something before the presidential election in 2004 that the Iranians had stopped their nuclear weapons program.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was saying.
I see. Okay. I thought maybe you were talking about the 2006 elections, but what were, you know, the outlines of the intelligence are starting to be defined a little bit. And apparently the U.S. came into possession of some notes of senior military officials and meetings that they attended. And according to today's New York Times, again, this is all unattributed, and so we can't rely on it to a great degree. But what they are informing us is that they intercepted these diaries or memos or other documents that showed that senior military officials in Iran were very upset that the nuclear development program had been suspended, and that this was the information that more recently came into U.S. possession. But the earliest I've heard that that occurred was from Seymour Hersh, which places it in the fall of 2006. So perhaps it was available to U.S. intelligence before the November 06 elections, but it doesn't appear, again, based on the sketchy info that we have right now, that it was available in 2004.
Peter, it's very interesting because you've had Dr. Beeman on the William Beeman on the show.
Yes, we have.
And we've talked about the real lack of power that Ahmadinejad has. And doesn't it seem odd that we couldn't get this information before and then suddenly we have it? It strikes me as moderate Iranians in the government leaking those to our intelligence, to some other third-party intelligence agency, and it floating over to our CIA. Because he has no real power, and the last thing the Iranians, moderate Iranians, want is a conflict, is a military conflict with the United States, contrary to what our administration says.
And if I've got my facts right, I believe that Ahmadinejad was elected in 05 or 06, so that the suspension of the program occurred before he became the president of Iran.
And he is serving, most of his statements serve a domestic political agenda for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he doesn't have any military authority, and that's something that Bush and Cheney refused to acknowledge, but it's a fact of the way the Iranian government is set up. So it's just interesting how suddenly there's no information, then we happen to intercept, you know, how do you intercept a diary?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds fishy. It sounds like we just handed over and said, look, here's the proof that we don't have a program.
Well, but the 05 intelligence estimate was based on a stolen laptop that
mm-hmm.
that said there was a program.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think we can all concede that Iran is a challenging target for our intelligence agencies. And that, you know, it's fair to give the intelligence community some latitude, but not this kind of whiplash.
No, I would say that there's some probably good intel work being done on the behind the scenes, and a lot of people would rather avoid a military conflict in Iran, and that includes the Iranians and some third-party intelligence organizations as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Peter, I just want to bring a little bit of interesting news, and something I try to avoid is reading the Washington Times,
mm-hmm.
the Mooney paper.
That's right.
But they're reporting that Iraqi officers have gone missing in the U.S. They were being trained, as part of a special intelligence and training program and have run away and are seeking asylum in this country or have disappeared altogether.
How many?
From my little blurb, it doesn't say, but what concerns me is that part of a cell, a strike back cell. That would be very worrying to me if I was the Department of Homeland Security. Now, they'll probably ignore it and keep, you know, a French student out of the country.
Yeah. Where were these people being trained?
Doesn't say from my from what I see.
So it's a short blurb. Is this the Army Times?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
The early bird brief.
Mm-hmm.
So the Washington Times is reporting that this is that they're missing.
Wow. Well,
that's not good.
No, it's not. We'll have to keep an eye on that one. Now, we've got a little time in this segment here for your sound bites from General Casey. Why don't you set this up? He gave a speech at the Brookings Institution in Washington.
On Tuesday, he went over there in his battle dress uniform. He didn't even dress up. It was a packed house, and he was an invited guest speaker, or you know how the invitations work. Maybe he called them and said, I need to come talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what he had to say for the in the first 10 minutes. I'm not playing 10 minutes, but in the first 10 minutes, he was very interesting. Here we go. General Casey.
There is no question that the Army is stretched as a result of more than 6 years at war. And as a result of that stretch, the force, and particularly the families, are stressed. And I wrestled very hard to find the right word to describe the condition of the Army that was stretched and stressed. And the term I came up with was out of balance. That the Army today is out of balance. We're consumed by the demands of the current operations, and as a result, we're not able to do the things to prepare for the future and to sustain the all-volunteer force.
We are not prepared to sustain the all-volunteer force.
So is that suggesting he wants a draft?
I think it's a different kind of code.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, one conflict is enough. And if there was some kind of unintended consequence of bombing Iran, we couldn't sustain any kind of deployment. And this is very interesting. Not only does he goes on to clarify. One of the things that we've been talking about, Peter, and Democrats in Congress have been talking about, is that there's too short of time for soldiers once they get back to the United States, once they're redeployed. And he says this. Now, we've been saying this. And the Department of Defense, when it was being run by Rumsfeld, was saying, no, they have plenty of time. And I think this is interesting. This is 13 seconds long. Here.
Go ahead.
Between deployments is too short, one, for the soldiers to adequately recover, and two, so that they can conduct the full spectrum of training so they're ready to operate across the spectrum of conflict.
Now, I want to put a face on this. I met an Army major who remained nameless. He was in the 25th ID, and he was part of a 12-month deployment. His first was in Kandahar in Afghanistan. The second was in Iraq. And the 25th ID is in Hawaii. Married. And when his unit was extended, his wife said, screw this, I'm done staying here. And she moved back to Florida. So there's a face on the there's a casualty, not just the combat casualty, but the casualty of families that are being riven apart by multiple deployments.
Well, and the reservists and National Guard members who never expected to serve multiple tours or tours of 15 months, many of those are, you know, losing their jobs, losing businesses, and losing their families through divorce.
And so now you have the chief of staff of the Army coming out and saying, yeah, our troops aren't staying home long enough. And, you know, for professional soldiers, like field grade officers, their ties with their families are stronger. They work harder. So these young enlisted folks, I mean, the toll, I would like to see an honest assessment of the divorce and rates and the abuse rates that are happening when these kids come back from their first deployment, their second deployment, their third deployment, and how all of the stresses that they have when they come back, financial, social, cultural, come out to play. And it's a toll we're not talking about. At least the Bush administration is not talking about.
No, you're right. It's a very important set of issues. And we've got to add to that depression, PTSD, and suicide, all of which are climbing astronomically among the population of Iraq and Afghanistan vets.
Absolutely. And then we've had this constant drumbeat that the Army is going to cease operations because the Congress doesn't support the troops.
Yeah.
Or am I crazy? And so Tuesday, amongst in between all of this crap coming out of Cheney's lips and out of Bush's lips, we have General Casey. I want folks to listen carefully. Peter, listen carefully.
Right now, the time at home is only sufficient for them to focus on their counterinsurgency mission because they're going right back to Iraq or Afghanistan. Our equipment, we're using it about five times the normal rate. That's not sustainable over time. We've got great support from Congress to begin resetting that equipment, but we're using that at a sustainable rate. Now,
what did he say, Peter?
He said we're using it five times faster than normal. It's not a sustainable rate.
And before that?
We're getting some help from Congress.
We're getting great support from Congress, is what he said. And so, you know, somebody's lying. And I trust General Casey 100 times more than I trust. And I met him when he was a colonel because he came to Bosnia and worked with us there. I know him. He's an honorable guy.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the kind of stuff that Rumsfeld would have never, never allowed.
Yeah. Interesting. You got one more soundbite, right?
I do. It's a little bit longer. And this is the
we got time. We got time. So go ahead.
Unsustainable rates where it really gets into it. And folks should be very concerned because later on in his briefing, he talks about the persistent nature of this new kind of warfare, and we are not prepared for it. So let's just listen to this.
And we are, as an institution, suffering from the cumulative effects of 6 years at war. So we're out of balance. Now, what do I mean by out of balance? We're deploying at unsustainable rates. Several months ago, we increased our deployment, our boots on the ground time, we call it, to 15 months. We needed to do that to support the requirements of the commanders, to give our soldiers and families some predictability, and most importantly, to ensure that the soldiers that were deploying had at least 12 months at home so they could properly prepare to go. Now, we did that with the full understanding that it was temporary. We can't sustain that. We have to come off of that. We're working that very hard. I think you can understand that when we decide to come off it, we're going to be darn sure that we're not going to have to go back. And so I expect an announcement on that here in the next 3 or 4 months as we watch the situation there on the ground.
Now, we're not getting any of this out of the regular media or out of the right-wing media. That's General Casey coming out of his lips. We're not hearing that anything except for on your show, Peter.
Well, in fact, what we're hearing is a confusing array of information because on the one hand, they tell us the surge is working and that therefore we can start to bring some troops home. So there's a brigade coming home in December because it was scheduled to come home a year ago.
Right,
yet
now, Peter,
yet they're claiming that current circumstances permit this return. Go ahead.
What I'm hearing out there is that there is a brain drain going on in the middle management officer and senior NCO corps, especially what they're saying is people who have the intellectual capacity to get out and get jobs or go to different specialties inside the military are fleeing in droves. And what they're giving the others are opportunities to go to the National Training Center in Fort Irwin or the JROTC. That's the ground one out in the east somewhere, I forgot. And he said it's almost literal. They start that 12-month dwell time stopwatch practically when your foot touches American soil off the jet. And he said you'll be sent to a mobile training team 12 months, almost to the day after you arrive. That's no way to treat these guys. So everybody who's leaving, everybody who can leave, is going someplace else. And that's why there's that $35,000, $40,000 bonuses to try to keep those middle guys, which is the core of the combat army, because captains are the last officers who really fight on the battlefield.
We got to take a break, and we'll return with Scott Dick. He's our contributor on military and veterans issues. Lines open if you'd like to talk with us at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. Pacific storms pounding the left coast this weekend. I hope you're batting down and keeping dry. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Well, good afternoon. Happy Friday. Checking traffic on KRXA and pretty quiet for a Friday. Just a couple of things out there. Starting off northbound 1 after Carpenter Street in Carmel. A broken down car that ties up the left-hand lane there. Down in Greenfield, south 101 after Underwood Road, we have a solo spinout that's being reported in the center divide. CHP just arriving on the scene. Highway 17 as you make your way through the Santa Cruz Mountains. Currently checks in Stalin accident-free. Southbound 17 making your way onto southbound 1 in Santa Cruz. Already seeing some heavy traffic there. Highway 68. It's been great this afternoon. No stalls, no accidents. 101 through Salinas, a pretty good drive right now as well. And this is brought to you by JCPenney. This Friday and Saturday, it's the JCPenney huge sale with Mammoth Doorbusters. Saturday only, 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Go to jcp.com now to see the deals. JCPenney. If you spot a traffic problem out there, give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix. That's traffic on KRXA.
Sofas, dinette sets, mattresses, and more. If you have a home furnishing need, we're the place you need to be. So come on down to your friendly town of Marina and visit us. Furniture Outlet, 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in Marina.
Hi, I'm John.
And I'm John.
And we're from All Class Transportation, where we take you to your special event in style, comfort, and safety. All Class Transportation is a truly professional local luxury transportation company with over 25 years of combined managerial service, an efficient, proactive staff, trained, certified chauffeurs, and a fleet of well-maintained luxury vehicles. We are well-suited to meet and exceed your specific needs.
All Class Transportation specializes in personalized luxury transportation, including company parties, corporate events, weddings, quinceañeras. Whatever your needs, call All Class Transportation at 831-582-9338. That's 582-9338. Want to know about our rates? At All Class Transportation, our service and rates are second to none, period. We are All Class Transportation, TCP 22978A. Call us at 831-582-9338. That's 582-9338.
AllEtronic.com. Get all your receipts online. These paper receipts are killing our trees. 9 million a year, it's just wrong. Everybody now.
AllEtronic.com. Get all your receipts online. These paper receipts are killing our trees. 9 million a year, it's just wrong.
AllEtronic.com.
Do you love KRXA 540? Show your support for our radio station by placing a bumper sticker on the bumper of your vehicle. Click on the bumper sticker at KRXA540.com and think for yourself.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and this portion is brought to you by the Organic Wine Company. Log on to organic, let's see, I got to get it right, ecowine.com, or call 888-ECO-WINE and talk to Veronique. They've got some great holiday specials to help you celebrate. And I understand that Veronique Raskin is going to be appearing on Scott Dick's Tasty Planet this weekend.
That is a fact. I'm looking forward to that.
Okay, that should be a lot of fun. Saturdays on KRXA 540, and you can log on to KRXA540.com if you want to listen online. Let's take some calls. We've got Bill in Sacramento. Thanks for holding, Bill. You're
yeah,
next
hi,
here.
How are you doing?
Good
hi,
to hear
Bill.
From you.
Wow, this is really interesting. Can I back up just for a minute to go back to what that question you guys were asking, like why are they going into
sure,
why
Bill,
do they want to go into Iran?
Bill, slam it into reverse and hit the gas. Go ahead.
I just wanted to remind you something that happened some time ago. Back when the war first started, there was mention of a plan that had come about in Israel, I guess, and had spawned the PNAC. And as a result of that, this program was called Clean Break. And what it was entailed was that they were going to redraw the whole Middle Eastern area. And part of their philosophy was for the global domination was to go in and privatize Iraq, put air bases there so they'd have flyover rights, access to Asia, and control of all the oil resources there. And so that's what's happened. They've put bases there. They've got the biggest embassy, et cetera, et cetera. The plan required them to also go in and make sure that Iran and Iraq, who had threatened to use oil as a weapon, to not go switch over to the euro, because that was going to mess up the World Bank situation.
I'm aware of that. Yeah.
And because the war got bogged down a little bit and the truth started to come out, things got slowed down. But they still needed to go into Iran to pull this whole plan off. Gates, remember, was one of the original people that worked with Bush's father. He was CIA, and he worked for Carter, and he was part of his National Security Council.
Yeah, Gates does go back that far.
Yeah,
he was a Soviet expert.
Right. He met with H.W. Bush over in Italy and the Shah of the Ayatollah Khomeini and all of them to put together that they held the prisoners over there until Reagan.
No. Let's not give Gates too much credit here. It was Bill Casey who actually met in Paris with representatives of the Ayatollah, the so-called October surprise that caused the hostages to be released on Inauguration Day.
Right. But there was also another meeting. The Russians verified it and collaborated that they met in Italy also.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, and so he knew the people in Iran, and that was the only, like you say, the only choice that he, working with his father, to replace Rumsfeld, because they all go back to the same group, as far back as Nixon even. This whole team comes from there.
You're right.
But anyway, this new thing of disaster economics and privatization of America is still behind all this too. In the process of breaking down our National Guards, and you were talking about some of the people leaving the military, a lot of them are leaving for bonuses to go join these private organizations, some of which you remember New Bridge Strategies, with Joe Albaugh and all that.
Right.
There's a whole bunch of them over there. If you go on and look for contractors, you'll find all kinds of names, and most of these people are recruits from other states like Russia and Pinochet's group. I mean, they come from all over the globe. They're just mercenaries that are willing to fight for anybody any corporation's got the money.
South African, Sierra Leone. Yeah.
Anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, Bill, you get one more point, then I need to move on.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, so anyway, they want to hold. They keep also coming up. You've noticed that they keep coming up with reasons to hold on to the bases that they've got there power. And at the same time, they're destroying no veterans benefits, like you were saying, no jobs for the returning guys.
Mm-hmm.
Suicide rate went up. This is all part of this strategy, though, to privatize America. And this goes back even in 2003, he wrote that Executive Order 13303, which created Iraq Inc. and said that it provided cover for them, even though it's illegal, it provided cover for anybody working as an agent of the United States to commit war crimes or do whatever. They couldn't be prosecuted.
Yeah, that was one of Bremer's decrees, too. Thank you, Bill. Great to hear from you in Sacramento today. Now to Leila. Leila, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air, Leila.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you and Scott for bringing, you know, this stuff out and progressive radio in general, because I just put my son on a plane yesterday morning to go back to Afghanistan.
Oh, my. Merry Christmas.
Bless you, yeah.
And he was only here for 3 weeks. He's been deployed since March. And he was only here for 3 weeks, which is kind of a cruel joke, because it's like it takes him 2 weeks to adjust to even being back. And then by the time he's, you know, back to normal, he gets sent back.
Yeah.
And I can just imagine what it's like for the people who have children, because I have a 7-year-old, and to try to explain to her why her brother has to go back is just, it's hard to do.
Go ahead, Scott.
But when is he supposed to redeploy?
He was deployed March 28th, and I thought he would probably be there through June, but he says he's supposed to come back March 15th.
It's possible that they're doing a 12-month there instead of 15.
Yeah.
It's just a turnaround to get him 12 months on the, you know, dwell time, which does, you know, Peter, that's something else. These guys don't go home every day at 5 o'clock when they're at home 12 months.
Right.
they get a couple of weeks, 3 weeks or 4 weeks of leave where they come in half days, that kind of thing. And then they go back to the training cycle. And the training cycle goes back to 24-hour days, deployed down, you know, at their training area, wherever it is, going to the ranges, all that stuff they've been doing, they're right back in the mix,
mm-hmm.
right back in the blender.
Lee Isla, we wish you the best, and our thoughts are with you.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in today. Scott Dick, thanks for all your contributions. We'll talk to you again next week.
You're welcome, Peter.
Scott Dick here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Coming up next, we're going to go live to Bali, Indonesia, and get a report on the climate conference right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Podcasts, email, pictures of him, peterbcollins.com. Veronique, explain the value of wines made from organic grapes.
You know, I think that drinking organic wines is what Tony Robbins described as a class one experience. Wines made with organic grapes feel good. They taste extremely good, just like an organic tomato or strawberry tastes usually better than a conventional counterpart. They are good. There's plenty of scientific evidence about the health benefits of drinking wine in moderation. Drinking organic wines also is good for other people in that you know you're supporting farmers. And last but not least, it's definitely good then for the higher good.
The Organic Wine Company. Log on to ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE toll-free. That's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them...
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney.
Well, that's good news for the military. It'll be a welcome news for family members.
CBS News military analyst Mike Lyons on word that combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan will soon be scaled back. According to the Associated Press, the Bush administration plans to announce next week that tours will be reduced from 15 months to 12 starting this summer.
By reducing the number of soldiers in Iraq and these tours means that they're confident that in the next 5 to 6 months that the security mission has taken its hold, the Iraqis have embraced it, and that they've really stopped this enemy from waging war, at least in a manner that they require U.S. forces to combat it with.
General David Petraeus, the top U.S. military commander in Iraq, delivers a progress report to Congress next week. 17 Iraqi civilians were killed last September when Blackwater USA security guards escorting a convoy opened fire on a crowd. But CBS News reporter Charles Wolfson tells us the company's contract is being renewed.
Blackwater will be protecting the State Department's diplomatic personnel in Baghdad for at least another year. State Department officials decided to approve extension of Blackwater's contract because, as one official put it, we need to continue operations in Iraq. In other words, without private security contractors, America's diplomats would not have the kind of protection needed to do their jobs.
The shooting is still being investigated by the FBI. The economy lost 80,000 jobs last month, and the unemployment rate jumped.
Looks like a recession to me.
Beth Ann Bovino is senior economist at Standard & Poor's.
The economy is slowing down. Employers aren't hiring. We also saw unemployment rate rise to 5.1%. You can also see that there's an increasing number of people that stopped looking for jobs because basically they became discouraged with the weak market.
March was the third month in a row of shrinking unemployment rolls, and the job losses were widespread. Construction, factories, retailing, banks, and real estate.
I'm Mark Noller with the president in Zagreb, Croatia. Calling the job numbers disappointing, the White House says it has warned that the early part of the year would reflect economic weakness. The administration blames disruptions in the housing and financial markets and says it will take time to work through those challenges.
It's been an ugly day in Vicksburg, Mississippi.
Roof damage on multiple businesses and homes, power outages, pretty much over the entire city.
Police Captain Mark Culverson told us about the damage caused by severe thunderstorms sweeping across the south.
I've seen some like this, I've seen some worse, but I wouldn't want to be in any of them.
Tornadoes have been reported in some spots. Officials warn of more flooding after all this heavy rain. High water in western Kentucky claimed a 2-year-old girl when her mother drove around a bend and their vehicle was submerged. On Wall Street, the Dow fell 16 points to finish the week at 12,602. That's a gain of more than 3% for the week. The Nasdaq rose 7 points today. This is CBS News.
Like everyone, I have a medical history. But unlike most people's, mine is always working for me.
Aetna's personal health record provides our members with secure anytime access to their medical histories. It automatically scans test results, diagnoses, and new prescriptions and compares them to the latest medical findings.
It alerted me to important information I shared with my doctors.
We want you to know. Aetna.
The personal health record is offered by Aetna Life Insurance Company. The Aetna personal health record should not be used as the sole source of information about the member's health conditions or medical treatments. Available information on test diagnoses and prescriptions may vary by member.
Guys, the men's store inside JCPenney has a big idea. A big and tall idea, to be exact. Big and tall clothes that fit, look good, and are easy to find. Get to the men's store and find big and tall sports shirts, knit tops, and shorts, all 40% off. Plus, get all the great brands you know and trust. Izod, Van Heusen, Dockers, Hager, St. John's Bay, all in big and tall sizes. Being big and tall shouldn't be a big headache. That's why the men's store inside JCPenney makes it easy to get in, find it, and get out. JCPenney.
A monkey wearing a diaper escaped from its owner today and led authorities on a wild chase in Orlando. CBS News correspondent Peter King has the story.
Floridians are used to alligators, even bears, showing up in the neighborhood, but not this.
Then my supervisor said, Miriam, that's a monkey, a little monkey.
Passers-by try to catch him.
I want to take him home for a pet, but, you know, after he kind of growled at me and chased me down the street. But it's just not the monkey that I want to deal with.
Animal control officers tried for an hour, but even they couldn't catch him. This woman helped.
He came to me and he jumped on my back.
Her secret? All right, it sounds cliche, but hey, you never know when that banana might come in handy. Police say the monkey may actually be a chimpanzee. Now they're trying to find its owner. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
Police in Lansing, Michigan are looking for a woman who stole a 20-inch boa constrictor from a pet store by putting the snake down her pants. The security camera caught her. The owner says, I am far less concerned for the person than for the snake. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Go, come on, get it going. I'm excited about this. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good, doesn't it?
You look good in it.
Feel good.
Yeah.
God, that's sweet.
That's 22 horsepower?
Yeah,
it's better than my car.
It's time for tractor love. This weekend at the Home Depot Try Before You Buy event, test drive brands like Toro, Cub Cadet, and John Deere, plus get special deferred financing on qualifying tractor purchases with your Home Depot consumer credit card. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Through April 9th in U.S. only. See store for details.
Tell me what you want. Dell has people talking, like the customer who wrote exactly what small businesses have needed for years. Need savings too? Take $250 off on a select Dell Vostro desktop with a 20-inch widescreen flat panel monitor featuring Intel Core 2 Duo processor. Put Dell to work for your small business at Dell.com/radio. Prices do not include taxes and other fees. Limited time offer. U.S. only, subject to change.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. We're going to take a look at planet Earth, its present and future. About 30 minutes from now, we're going to get a report on the Bali Climate Conference. It appears there may be a departing communique that could be meaningful. Kit Batten from the Center for American Progress will update us in about 30 minutes. This half hour, we are joined by journalist Jacques Leslie, and we're going to talk about the situation in China, the environmental conditions that they are facing there. Jacques Leslie, he got a big start at the age of 24 as a war correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. In the 70s, he published a book called The Mark, a war correspondent's memoir of Vietnam and Cambodia. And I'm a delighted subscriber to Harper's Magazine, where I've read his work. And in 2000, he published a cover story for Harper's called Running Dry, What Happens When the World No Longer Has Enough Fresh Water. And apparently that set him on a bender. Of science and environmental writing. Jacques Leslie, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Oh, thanks. It's a pleasure to be here, Peter.
Is that a fair assessment, that the Harper's piece that you wrote kind of shifted your focus?
Well, in fact, I've been trying to do environmental pieces for a long time and finding a lot of difficulty because editors just weren't interested. But by about 2000, the tide was beginning to turn, and I found a very interested editor, Colin Harrison, at Harper's. And once that piece appeared, I had no longer any trouble in writing about the environment, and that's what I've been doing ever since.
Mm-hmm. And then you wrote Deep Water, the epic struggle over dams, displaced people, and the environment in 2005. And I don't believe I read the whole book, but I certainly remember. I think that was excerpted in Harper's. Am I correct?
Not in Harper's. It was excerpted in Orion magazine.
Okay. But I do recall reading portions of it. So today we want to talk about China, and that's the focus of a piece that you've written for Mother Jones Magazine. It's on the website of motherjones.com. Will this be in the next issue of the magazine, Jacques?
It will indeed be the cover story.
Okay, great. And you open your piece with a riveting description of a rush hour drive through Beijing. You survived it, but based on the description, it sounded really, really hairy.
That's absolutely true. I was with my guide, a fellow environmentalist, who had taken me to see some terribly desertified land in Inner Mongolia, and we were on our way back to Beijing. And we were in a hurry, and so he went through a toll station, paid a toll, and then discovered that we were at the very rear of a huge traffic jam, the sort of thing that strikes in China quite often, in which coal trucks get backed up for miles as they have to pay fees and the police take their time. The fees are really bribes very often.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been stories saying that trucks have waited in those lines for as long as 2 weeks. So when my driver saw this, he did the obvious thing. He turned the car around, and we were going westbound on the eastbound expressway.
Wow, without a Blackwater Escort?
Maybe that's what we needed.
I thought that only happened in occupied Iraq.
Well, I was prepared to die at that point because Beijing traffic is the world's worst,
mm-hmm.
and the accident rate is the highest there. But nothing happened to us. He drove back nearly to the toll booth, then made a sharp right turn towards the center divider, found a lane that was reserved for passenger traffic where those coal trucks couldn't go, and suddenly we were free. And then as we drove by these coal trucks, we saw the drivers sitting on their trucks, eating meals, sleeping. They knew it was going to be a long wait, but
wow.
We managed to escape.
And as you're stuck in traffic there in Beijing, what is the air quality like?
The air quality is certainly among the world's worst. In fact, in China, 16 of the 20 most polluted cities are Chinese. That's a function of the vast amount of coal that is burned in China, plus all these traffic jams across the country.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with journalist Jacques Leslie. As he mentioned, he's got the cover story in the forthcoming Mother Jones magazine. You can read it online right now at motherjones.com. And if I may lift a quote here, Jacques, I think this is a very descriptive couple of paragraphs that will help people understand what China looks like these days. A fourth of the country is now desert. More than three-fourths of its forests have disappeared. Acid rain falls on a third of China's landmass, tainting soil, water, and food. Excessive use of groundwater has caused land to sink in at least 96 Chinese cities, producing an estimated $13 billion in economic losses in Shanghai alone. Each year, uncontrollable underground fires, sometimes triggered by lightning and mining accidents, consume 200 million tons of coal, contributing massively to global warming. A miasma of lead, mercury, sulfur dioxide, and other elements of coal burning and car exhaust hovers over most Chinese cities. And as you mentioned, of the world's 20 most polluted cities, 16 are Chinese. The government estimates that 400,000 people die prematurely from respiratory illnesses each year, and health care costs for premature death and disability related to air pollution estimated at up to 4% of the country's gross domestic product. 4/5 of the lengths of China's rivers are too polluted for fish. Half the population, 600 or 700 million people, drinks water contaminated with animal and human waste. Into Asia's longest river, the Yangtze, the nation annually dumps 1 billion tons of untreated sewage. Some scientists fear the river will die within a few years. Drained by cities and factories all over northern China, the Yellow River, whose cataclysmic floods earned it a reputation as the world's most dangerous natural feature, now flows to its mouth feebly, if at all. China generates 1/3 of the world's garbage, most of which goes untreated. Meanwhile, roughly 70% of the world's discarded computers and electronic equipment ends up in China, where it is scavenged for usable parts and then abandoned, polluting soil and groundwater with toxic metals. Now, this is just a quick two-paragraph summary of the situation. This is very, very dire. And when we see China pointing fingers at the United States here at the Bali Conference Climate, saying that, why should we clean up our act when you insist on only voluntary measures? And I want to hear your thoughts, Jacques, because China wants to be treated on a per capita basis for their pollution and their contributions to climate change. And while I do understand that they have a much bigger population than any other country on Earth, isn't that an unfair way in terms of trying to work with governments to reduce the contributions of nations as opposed to what individuals might do?
I'm not so sure. There are a few different strands to pull apart here. In terms of pollution, the Chinese are deeply concerned. They know how polluted their rivers and their air are, all their water, and they are desperate to do something about it. They know that people are dying every day because of it, and they are trying to do something about it against very difficult odds. Climate change, by contrast, strikes them as something a little bit down the list, because it's more theoretical and abstract. You don't see people dying of climate change, at least not in any fashion that anybody can identify.
Understood.
And at the same time, the major contributor of greenhouse gases in the world so far has been the United States, not China. China, at least according to some sources, recently passed the U.S. as the leading creator of greenhouse gases in the world. But if you go back cumulatively over the last 100, 150 years, and those gases, particularly CO2, stays in the atmosphere for 100 years, it's the United States that is still by far the world's leading contributor. So it is somewhat reasonable for the Chinese to say the United States must take the major responsibility for climate change. And indeed, if I can go a step further, what I would say what China is chiefly guilty of is emulating the American economic model.
Mm-hmm.
From the 1980s on, Chinese policymakers went on foreign study missions to figure out how they could foster growth. Once they abandoned Maoist economic principles and decided to go for a capitalistic system, they studied the United States and Japan and South Korea, and they got all kinds of encouragement for creating a consumer society with a lot of waste, with sprawl development, no thought to pollution. And that's what they've done. They've followed the American model. I think officials in the U.S. thought, this is great. At last, we will have this market in China for our products that we've always wanted. But what they didn't think of was that while the market has certainly developed, at the same time, what's developed even more rapidly has been Chinese manufacturing capacity. Because, of course, what China can offer, its one vast resource is labor, with its 1.3 billion population.
Mm-hmm.
And so all those laborers have made China the world's manufacturer now, and that was not what the U.S. Was counting on.
I take your point, Jacques. Now, if the U.S. and Al Gore acknowledged in his speech in Bali the other day that we are a major problem for any progress forward to dealing with climate change, and if regime change occurs in Washington and we have new policies coming out of the next administration, what is your sense of how China will respond?
That's an interesting question. I can't say I've investigated that very thoroughly because I didn't want to get into the future. The present was horrifying enough.
Indeed.
But I think that the best path for the United States now is to model sane environmental behavior. And if it does that, I think that China will be compelled to go along. It will no longer be able to say, well, look, we don't need to do it because the U.S. isn't doing it. I think that's the best path for the U.S. and for the world.
We're talking with journalist Jacques Leslie. His cover story is on the next issue of Mother Jones magazine. You can get it right now at motherjones.com. We're talking about the environmental conditions in China. And there's more on the other side of this break. If you have a question or comment, you can call me toll-free. It's 888-5-PETER-B. You got that? 1-888-573-8372. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Brian Urban is on duty taking your calls today. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hello, this is Solazar.
Hi, I'm Carolani.
Join us this Sunday at 6 p.m. for Good Vibrations, Tools for Transformation.
Together, we'll transform your relationships, communication, health, and the ability to reach your goals and dreams.
Good Vibrations, Sunday at 6 p.m. on AM 540 KRXA.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Checking traffic on KRXA. Busy on a Friday. New crash Santa Cruz Mountain southbound 17 after Bear Creek Road. Two cars involved. They're both off to the right-hand shoulder. Southbound 17 onto southbound 1 at Santa Cruz, of course, heavy. Traffic will stay slow on southbound 1 all the way down to about 41st Avenue in Capitola. Also in Gonzales, northbound 101 before Gloria Road. Watch out for a ladder. That's in the two left-hand lanes. We have a crash in Morgan Hill right now. South 101 before Cochrane Road. Three cars. All of that is off to the shoulder, but traffic is backed up all the way from Bailey Avenue in South San Jose. This is brought to you by Sprint. Communicate in less than a second and get more done with Nextel Direct Connect only on the Now Network. Visit Sprint.com/Nextel for details. If you spot a traffic problem, give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix. That's traffic on KRXA.
we continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. Our music of the moment is from Peter Gabriel. This one's called Red Rain. We're talking with journalist Jacques Leslie. His cover story is in the forthcoming Mother Jones magazine about environmental conditions in China. And you can read it online at motherjones.com. He's got a website, too, at jacquesleslie.com. L-E-S-L-I-E is how he spells his last name. And Jacques, continuing from your article here, I only know of the islands of Quemoy and Matsu from trivia questions. I've never been there in the Taiwan Straits. But you describe a situation here where these islands that were the subject of a heated dispute in the late 1950s are now the scene of garbage and pollution and acid rain. Describe that for us, please.
Well, there was a time, I think, going as recently as the 70s when the Chinese mainland would fire shells into Quemoy just to indicate the hostility between Taiwan, which controls Quemoy, and mainland China. That has stopped, but what is probably worse now is that there's just a constant flow of garbage coming from China that reaches the beaches of Quemoy by the many tons per year. I have a statistic somewhere, but it's hundreds of tons or thousands of tons.
I've got it in front of me, 800 metric tons a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's just a small indication of the effluents that are coming out of China, going into the South China Sea and the Yellow Sea, causing huge outbreaks of red tide, killing all kinds of animals in the ocean. And that's just the beginning of the international impacts of this pollution coming from China.
Mm-hmm. And now, you described in the preceding segment that both the citizens and the government of China are very concerned, yet these seem to be the kinds of things that are controllable. Garbage, you know, floating along the waterway there. With all the labor that's available, you'd think that some of these things could be cleaned up in a win-win formula.
Well, keep in mind that China's standard of living is a tenth of what we have in the United States. And while the cities are growing in wealth, a lot of China is still extremely poor. And so the imperative that the Chinese government continues to feel is economic growth. That's what it must do. Whereas taking care of the environment seems like something that isn't as important. And particularly, they've tried to develop in the space of 30 years what took the United States, or maybe a century and a half to do.
Right.
And they haven't really thought about these environmental issues until very recently. Still, most of the waste that goes into Chinese rivers is untreated, and that has been devastating for the rivers. Local officials are told, well, you should stop that, but they're also told that they're being evaluated according to their region's economic performance. So that comes first. They don't challenge the companies that are dumping garbage into the rivers. They don't want to lose the jobs that those companies provide. They might be paid bribes as well.
Now, with the Summer Olympics arriving in Beijing in 2008, is there an effort underway, in addition to building stadia and other public facilities, to try to clean things up and at least improve the air quality so we don't see every sprinter run for an oxygen tank at the end of their event?
There certainly is, although I would say it's somewhat cosmetic and it will last, if it lasts at all, simply as long as the Olympics do, and within a couple of weeks after the Olympics, I expect that Beijing will be on its way back to being as dirty as it was before. They are just about to stop construction in the city because construction raises a lot of dust, and so there are hundreds of these construction cranes you see everywhere in Beijing. They will stop moving at the end of the year to try to get that dust to calm down a bit. They've done quite a few other things. They've moved some factories out of Beijing. They will keep some cars off the streets during the Olympics. And there's at least a reasonable chance that the Olympics will not be terribly polluted, but that says nothing about the condition of the environment in China.
Will they be shutting down some of their coal-fired electricity generating plants? Because that appears to be a major contributor.
I haven't read that, but I suspect that'll be the case during the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jacques, I want to thank you for joining us. I want to recommend your article in the forthcoming Mother Jones to our listeners, and they can get a sneak peek online at motherjones.com.
Thank you, Peter. It's been a pleasure.
Jacques Leslie, thank you. We're going to take a break and return and get a report on the climate conference in Bali. Kit Batten from the Center for American Progress will join us here shortly. If you have a question or comment, you can bring it on toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. You're in tune with the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we would like to personally invite you to experience why Monterey County food critics are raving about our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Could it be our fantastic, one-of-a-kind specialty pizzas or huge calzones, such as the Jamaican Me Crazy, the White Sands Beach, the Veggin' Out, or the Wild Mushroom Dream?
Or could it be because we also offer delicious salads, sandwiches, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger?
Recently recognized as Local's Favorite, Best for Families, Most Creative, Big Screen and Big Eat, and will return to spend our own money.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with an ice-cold draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh-brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lappert's Hawaiian ice cream.
That's A Pizza Paradise, located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina, or call 582-9149 or see us on the web at apizzaparadise.net.
That's A Pizza Paradise.
582-9149.
At Homescapes Carmel, it's important to us that we appeal to both the senses and the sensibilities of our customers. I'm Thompson Lang, and my brother Beau and I invite you to explore, touch, and discover all the unique items we have at Homescapes in downtown Carmel. For importers like us, nothing beats finding eclectic and worldly things in their native lands and then bringing them home to Carmel by the sea. Homescapes Carmel is on the corner of 7th and Dolores, and as soon as you walk through the doors, you'll share in the thrill of discovery. We have a wide range of furnishings and accessories that exemplify wabi-sabi, celebrating the beauty, functionality, and morality of living green. At Homescapes Carmel, we're dedicated to our customers, to our employees, and to our community. We look forward to working with you to make your home the perfect blend of comfort, beauty, and individuality. Please stop by Homescapes Carmel on 7th and Dolores. We are open 7 days a week from 10 to 6. You can call us at 831-624-6499 or check us out at homescapescarmel.com.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Juan specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10%.
10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Bali, Indonesia. They're working on the global warming thing.
Well, there's a little something that's been freaking me. I'm reading in the news, I seen it on TV. It haunts me in the night and greets me in the morning. A spooky little thing called global warming. It seems our indispensable amenities, like airspray, air conditioners, and SUVs, are causing big emissions, all of which are forming a spooky little thing called global warming. Fluorofluorocarbon strip away ozone. They can't seem to leave the rainforest alone. Our temperatures are rising and they've now deduced the vampires of progress have come on to rule.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I always drive the freeway in a bulletproof vest. I have fiber in my diet and a blood pressure test. But this one is a doozy, which required forewarning. A spooky little thing called global warming. Now, baby, you know what I like. But, honey, your Hummer is...
Oh, that's my friend, Dr. Elmo. You know, after doing what he could for Christmas, he's now moved on to climate change and other worldly issues like that. That one's called global warming. That's our issue this half hour. And, of course, the Bali Climate Conference is in its final stages. They got a speech from Al Gore the other day, and he told that inconvenient truth, a 48-minute speech. He said, "My country's been responsible for obstructing the process here in Bali. We know that. Negotiate around this enormous obstacle, this elephant in the room." The elephant image there, it's not lost on me. So I give Al Gore a lot of credit. In his speech, he urged the Bali delegates to go far, quickly, in reducing greenhouse gas emissions linked to global warming, saying they should forge ahead with a consensus statement and leave a large open space in your document to allow a future U.S. president to work more aggressively to curb global warming. Over the next 2 years, the United States is going to be somewhere where it is not now. You must anticipate that. He added that he understood how some delegates might be tempted to abandon the process altogether, but he cautioned that if the talks collapse, the entire world could lose momentum and could lose progress. And Gore opened his speech by talking in a very moving way about the rapid shift of the ice cap, the polar ice cap, and in particular the timeline of different estimates of how long it would take for that ice cap to melt altogether. And I don't have the text in front of me, but as I recall, he started talking about how scientists in the early 90s thought that by the end of this century, that the polar ice cap would melt. And then a few years later, they revised those estimates to say 2050. And now, it could happen in as little as 6 years from right now. So it appears the process is escalating, and this is consistent with some of the projections of scientists who've been working on this issue for many years now, because they predicted that it would have an accelerating curve. And that's understandable, because you can imagine the ripple effects of heating of the planet, heating of the water, and how as melting starts to occur, it can accelerate, particularly if the conditions stay the same or continue to get warmer. And so once again, Al Gore, I think, has done the nation and the world a service by sharing his expertise and his passion on these particular issues. And word coming out of Bali today is encouraging. Delegates at the UN Climate Conference extended their closed-door talks into an extra day. It's Saturday in Bali, nearing resolution of a dispute over how far future negotiations should go in trying to cut emissions of greenhouse gases. The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is on his way there to try to help break any lingering impasse and see if they can reach a detailed agreement. And so this could be, very promising. According to this news account, which was published today, trying to break the deadlock, the conference president, Indonesian Environment Minister Rachmat Witolar, proposed revised language dropping explicit mention of numbers while substituting a reference to a UN scientific report suggesting the 25% to 40% range of cuts by 2020. And his proposal provided a basis for a long-expected compromise, producing a relatively vague mandate for the 2 years of negotiations. As worded, the Bali Roadmap draft would not guarantee any level of binding commitment by any nation. And developing countries such as big emitters like China and India, according to the draft, they would be instructing negotiators to consider incentives and other means to encourage poorer nations to voluntarily curb growth in their emissions. So this is, promising. It's hopeful. Late in the stages of this conference in Bali, and it will be interesting to see how it all shakes out. We had expected to talk with Kit Batten, who is an expert on these issues at the Center for American Progress. Brian called a few minutes ago and got her voicemail, on the first ring where you think somebody's there. So it's possible she will return our call and join us here shortly. But that's the information that I have up to the minute here on the situation in Bali and the conference that is underway there. So let's open up the phone lines here, and if you'd like to talk about this or other issues, about the conversation we had with Jacques Leslie about pollution in China, or the powerful discussion we had with Congressman Jim Moran about the situation in Washington and his assessment, which pretty well mirrored mine, about the weak performance of Democrats against the Republicans in this current year. All that is up for grabs, and you can give us a call toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. It's 888-573-8372, 888-5-PETER-B. It is interesting to see the way the world responds to these issues and the sharp contrast that here in the United States, as the Bush negotiators in Bali are there to put the brakes on and to prevent any real hard choices or really firm goals and targets for reductions of emissions to be agreed upon, that here in this country, as we heard Congressman Moran say, we have a situation where the Republicans and some auto industry supporting Democrats have continued the status quo, tried to hold on to as much of it as possible, bitterly fought the bill that apparently the president will be signing, the energy bill that calls for increase in the mileage standards of our automotive fleets, but still the money for renewable energy sources that was in the energy bill, that's gone. The proposal to roll back the tax breaks for big oil that Tom DeLay and Richard Pombo inserted in previous energy bills, that's gone. And so we're left with half a loaf, and it's better than nothing. The Democrats have changed the framing of energy negotiations. You notice this year, I don't recall anybody proposing to drill in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Maybe Jim Inhofe from Oklahoma did. I don't know. But we didn't hear any, sustained effort to drill for more oil as a way to improve our energy situation. So it is progress that renewables are emphasized, goals are being set, but the funding for that was stripped out because it was relying on the rollback of the tax breaks for big oil to try to pay for these renewable energy sources. So frustrating, but some progress there. At the same time, the image that the United States projects relative to energy, environmental concerns, and climate change is, well, it's tragic because we're not offering a leadership role whatsoever. If anything, we are offering a negative role model to China and other developing nations saying, hey, you don't have to commit to cutting your emissions because we won't either. And when Bush plays the jobs card and the economy card, it's an empty gesture because we know that if we made a firm commitment to reducing our emissions and reducing our dependence on oil in general, not just foreign oil, that we would put ourselves in a much better position economically and environmentally, and that's a win-win proposition. But, of course, it doesn't benefit the people who paid for the Bush tax cuts and his presidency. And that's, of course, big oil and wealthy Americans. 888-5-PETER-B. Join in here and let me know what's on your mind today. We'll be happy to take your calls. And we've got somebody on line one. I just have to check. It's Ken in Sacramento. Welcome, Ken. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Yeah, how you doing?
Okay.
Hey, just want to ask, because I listen to talk radio all the time. I've never heard anybody discuss, when they're talking about global warming, the chemtrails that are being developed every single morning by our government, costing billions of dollars a year, yet our government claims there's no such thing as global warming, and that's why they're being made.
What are the chemtrails? I'm deficient in this category. Edify me.
Well, chemtrails stands for chemical trails as opposed to contrails. All you got to do is look every morning and see the trails that are, it's actually kind of funny because I'm a PE teacher, so I'm out there every single morning watching them create these geometric designs, and then they come together and they create clouds. Well, if you Google this, you look it up, it tells you why chemtrails are being developed, and it all has to do with global warming.
So what is the source of the chemtrails?
Well, they're planes that are creating these fake clouds.
I see. And what is the purpose of this? Are we seeding the clouds? Are we trying to change the weather?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And has this been used, for example, you know, there's drought conditions in Georgia. Are we doing it there for a positive and an intended positive effect? Or is this occurring on a scale that I'm just oblivious to?
Well, I know it's being done in other countries because I travel quite a bit, being that I get 2.5 months off every year. And I can tell you it's being done in other countries, and they admit the reason that this is being done. This is being done in our country, and nobody talks about it. But like I say, all you can do is look it up online and read up on it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want the average citizen to know about this kind of stuff, but lots of money is being spent by our government seeding these clouds, and if you read up on it, you'll know it's because of global warming.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, are you aware of this occurring in California?
Oh, absolutely.
So where have you observed it, Ken? Where?
Every single day from my school, I can watch them. And I educate my students every single day, and it's become almost humorous. Every day my students say, are those real clouds or are those fake clouds?
Wow.
You know?
So what airplanes are emitting this? Are they coming from military bases or civilian airports?
I won't claim to know that much, but I'm guessing military.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
It's real obvious. It's almost like you could play tic-tac-toe with the geometric designs that are being made every single morning.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, I saw it again this morning.
Well, thanks for bringing that to my attention. I will look into it and see what I can find out.
Okay, it's just C-H-E-M.
Okay, got it, Ken. Thank you very much. That's Ken in Sacramento. We're going to take a break and return right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Lines are open if you'd like to join me. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. It's 888-573-8372. More straight ahead on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540.
Checking traffic on KRXA. Busy on a Friday. New crash Santa Cruz Mountain southbound 17 after Bear Creek Road. Two cars involved. They're both off to the right-hand shoulder. Southbound 17 onto southbound 1 at Santa Cruz, of course, heavy. Traffic will stay slow on southbound 1 all the way down to about 41st Avenue in Capitola. Also in Gonzales, northbound 101 before Gloria Road. Watch out for a ladder. That's in the two left-hand lanes. We have a crash in Morgan Hill right now. South 101 before Cochrane Road. Three cars. All of that is off to the shoulder, but traffic is backed up all the way from Bailey Avenue in South San Jose. This is brought to you by Sprint. Communicate in less than a second and get more done with Nextel Direct Connect only on the Now Network. Visit Sprint.com/Nextel for details. If you spot a traffic problem, give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix. That's traffic on KRXA.
Slow down.
This is Professor Mossberg, your host here at KRXA for the Poetry Slowdown. T.S. Eliot said, April is the cruelest month. What is cruel about April? Think about it for yourself. Call me on the show or write me at Barbara@KRXA540.com. We want to know your ideas for cruel April, and I'll tell you how my answer to that question 40 years ago launched my career in 30 countries with erupting volcanoes, caves, and other joys and terrors. As the poet Tennyson said, all times I have enjoyed greatly and suffered greatly, both with those who love me and alone. We'll be talking about cruel Aprils, spring, poems you love to hate to memorize. We'll have a glorious time making the morning last. Your inner poet kicking down those cobblestones. Sundays, right here on KRXA at high noon.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show. Weekdays, following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show. Weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Global warming is here. The effects may seem slight now,
but in a few decades, they could be massive.
Heat waves, floods, and food shortages. What can we do?
We can join together.
Because when many, unite as one.
We can achieve anything.
Together, we're powerful. Find out how we can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, brought to you in part by the Organic Wine Company. You eat organic food, wash it down with organic wine. It's the good stuff. Log on to ecowine.com for more information. Or to get a question answered or order some wine, call 888-ECO-WINE. That's 888-ECO-WINE. Joining me now on the PBC show is Kit Batten. She is the Managing Director for Energy and Environmental Policy at the Center for American Progress in Washington. Used to be a staffer on the Senate side of Capitol Hill. Kit, welcome to our program today. Kit, do we have you? I hear clicks, clicks, and clicks there. Brian, let's dial back, okay? Because I'm not sure what's going on there. We had her on item number two, and we'll see if we can connect up with Kit here directly and get her on the program. As we mentioned, the Bali climate talks are about to wrap up, but they appear to be going into overtime because there does seem to be the basis for an agreement, and it'll be very interesting to see just how many teeth are in the agreement because of the U.S. Opposition to any teeth. We want all gums all the time when it comes to dealing with the climate change issue. And so I think that over the next few days, we're going to get some idea as to whether this conference will produce a positive result. And if, as Al Gore has pointed out, with a change in leadership in Washington next year, that we may be able to really improve America's contributions to dealing with the climate change issues and the human behavior that has been contributing to global warming. Kit, I'm sorry for the technical problems there. I think we have you now.
Kit? Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Great. And you can hear me all right? Good.
Yes, I can.
I was just filling our listeners in that news from the AP indicates that the Bali climate talks have gone into a kind of overtime, and that it appears that there may be the basis for a meaningful agreement. What are you hearing?
Well, I heard the same thing. Talks went until 2 a.m. last night, and just this morning, right now, there's plenary session discussing the language that has been hopefully agreed upon. The Indonesian government came hopefully to the rescue with some language that would be agreeable both to the United States, the developing nations, and to the European Union, all of whom have been discussing most specifically mitigation targets or greenhouse gas emission reduction specific numbers that developing and developed nations should be working towards.
Mm-hmm. Vice President Gore, actually President Gore, made a speech there in Bali this week and said, "My country's been responsible for obstructing the process here. We know that. Negotiate around this enormous obstacle, this elephant in the room." Do you think that is actually going on, where the parties look at this and say, "We expect a substantive change in the United States posture, and so we'll just leave a kind of donut hole there and hope to fill it in later"?
I believe that that's absolutely right. Vice President Al Gore definitely made clear the moral responsibility of the United States and other developed nations to be making serious reductions in emissions in the near term. Part of the disagreement that's happened here is over near-term reduction language that was in the original draft language. This language would have committed developed nations to emission reductions of 25 to 40% below 1990 levels by 2020, and that's been a sticking point for the United States, for Canada, and Japan. What this new language will do is just put a placeholder there saying that we need to peak our emissions globally within the next 10 to 15 years, and that's necessary based on the science to avoid the worst impacts of global warming, and then also to more than halve global emissions by below 2000 levels by 2050. So instead of focusing specifically on what developed nations will do right now, we're setting a global target of which developed nations will have to do quite a lot to help meet that target. So it's a placeholder for now. It's still a strong language. It's not what the developing or a lot of the developed nations were hoping for, but this will allow for the negotiations to continue and hopefully to get more serious numbers in the language in the upcoming meetings.
Mm-hmm. Before you joined us today, we were talking with Jacques Leslie, a journalist who has a powerful news story in the upcoming Mother Jones magazine about the environmental conditions in China. And the descriptions are so bleak and overwhelming. And he says that because they still consider themselves to be a developing nation and that economic growth is their primary goal, that China doesn't quite recognize global warming as a contributor to any negatives for human life. They do see, for example, the smog over Beijing as directly related to respiratory illnesses and deaths of hundreds of thousands of Chinese every year. So how can we change their perception and move past this kind of competitive approach to who can do the least to deal with global warming issues and create incentives so that the process is a competition for who can do the most?
Absolutely, and to create the opportunities along with those incentives for developing new technologies and being able to export those technologies and grow economies around low-carbon technology. China does have quite a lot of pollution problems, and some of those smog problems that you mentioned are co-pollutants that are associated with the burning of coal. And, of course, burning coal and constructing as many new coal plants that China is currently not only produces CO2, a potent greenhouse gas, but also a lot of other air pollutants, including particulate matter, which are serious respiratory problems. Coming into this negotiation, developing nations such as China really wanted to see a serious commitment from the United States and from other developed nations in terms of reducing emissions, but also putting cards on the table in terms of these incentives that you discussed. The building blocks include adaptation money, and this is necessary because although it is the United States and other developed nations that are mostly responsible for the greenhouse gases that we currently have in the atmosphere, it's the developing nations that are feeling the effects of global warming most severely right now. And so having set aside devoted sufficient funds, recently the UN Development Program came out with a figure that we need $86 billion globally annually by 2015 to address the adaptation problem.
Well, we can handle that.
It's one of the incentives that should be on the table in order to get developing nations on board in terms of reducing their own emissions, but knowing that there will be funding from developed nations like adaptation funding to help them do this.
Well, we can go to our Chinese bankers, borrow the money, and then pay them to reduce their emissions, right?
It's not just China, of course. China is a huge emitter. It's going to surpass the United States in terms of overall emissions. But per capita emissions in China still are far below those in the United States, and then other developing nations are even much farther below that.
Right, Kit Batten. Thank you for your expertise. Good to talk to you today.
Thank you so much.
You bet. That's Kit Batten at the Center for American Progress. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. Grab the podcast at peterbcollins.com. Veronique, explain the value of wines made from organic grapes.
You know, I think that drinking organic wines is what Tony Robbins described as a class one experience. Wines made with organic grapes feel good. They taste extremely good, just like an organic tomato or a strawberry tastes usually better than a conventional counterpart. They are good. There's plenty of scientific evidence about the health benefits of drinking wine in moderation. Drinking organic wines also is good for other people in that you know you're supporting farmers. And last but not least, it's definitely good then for the higher good.
The Organic Wine Company. Log on to ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE toll-free. That's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Expect some good news when General David Petraeus reports to Congress.
Looks like the president's going to announce that we can go back to the 12-month tour, deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan, and back from the 15-month tour that we had to go to for our forces at the high point of the surge.
CBS News military consultant Jeff McCausland on an Associated Press report that an announcement is likely next week when General Petraeus and U.S. Ambassador Ryan Crocker give Congress an update on the situation in Iraq. Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki has been forced to suspend the Iraqi army's offensive against Shiite militiamen in Basra, but in Baghdad's Sadr City slum, CBS News chief foreign correspondent Lara Logan found U.S. forces on the attack.
Captain Logan B. said the militias threw everything they had at his men.
Small arms fire, RPGs, IED attacks, snipers, I mean the whole gambit of kinetic, other than like nuclear war.
That hasn't prevented the U.S. advance, but so far they've stopped short of going deep into the heart of Sadr City, where the militias are dug in amongst millions of people. A bloody street fight there could cost thousands of innocent lives and throw the capital into chaos. Lara Logan, CBS News, Sadr City.
The State Department says it will renew Blackwater's contract to provide security for U.S. diplomats in Iraq. This despite the episode last September when Blackwater guards opened fire on a crowd in Baghdad, killing 17 civilians. For the third month in a row, the U.S. economy lost jobs in March, 80,000 jobs, according to the Labor Department. And CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason says it isn't over.
It looks like the job loss trend is just getting worse and that it's probably not going to turn for a while. According to a Standard & Poor's forecast, the unemployment rate, which is 5.1% now, will probably be 6% by the end of the year. We're on a downward trend on job losses, and it's going to get worse.
For Stuart Hoffman, chief economist at PNC Financial, today's report seals the deal.
I think it does confirm that the U.S. economy slipped into what I think will still be a short and shallow recession.
Skybus Airlines has gone skybust. The discount carrier will cease operations after tonight. Just yesterday, ATA declared bankruptcy and grounded its planes, and Hawaii's Aloha Airlines recently suspended passenger service. The thunderstorms sweeping across the South have been severe.
Tried to take my feet.